Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling. OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
To be the man.
You gotta be the man.
Whoa. It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
And this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
Wojcicki, is it?
It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God.
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Can't buy me love, love, can't buy me love. I'll buy you a diamond ring, my friend, if it makes you feel alright. I'll get you anything, my friend, if it makes you feel alright. Cause I don't care too much for money, but money can't buy me love. I'll give you all I've got to give.
Yeah, baby, yeah. No, it's not Austin Powers night on the show. Tonight is British night on Online World of Wrestling Radio in tribute because later this evening we're going to have a very lovely British young lady on. Her name is Miss Rachel Collins, and she runs a very nice promotion based out of the Mid-South area called WXCW. That has Tasha Shimon wrestling for her, Brittany Savage wrestling, April Hunter's wrestled for them. They've got an event this weekend, so we're going to help her promote it along the way. So that's why if you hear some British old wave and new wave music, you're going, oh God, he's losing his mind on Online World of Wrestling Radio. No, we're not. 10 o'clock, whether you like it or not, the Iron Man, the Con Man, whatever you want to call him these days, Rob Conway, former WWE superstar and current New Focus Wrestling heavyweight champion. They've got an event this weekend in Evansville, Indiana. He will be here at 10 p.m. to talk with you through our chat room at wildtalkradio.com or owradio.com or our number. Now, the toll-free number is supposed to be back next week, finally from its sabbatical in Bora Bora. Tonight, if you want to dial in, two ways to do it. 267-297-1397, or you can Skype Sir Rockin. We will have Phil Strom of the Poughkeepsie Journal on in a little while to do WWE talk, including a preview of this Sunday's Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And in a couple moments, Kevin Scott will be joining us to talk TNA. But it's been a sad weekend. If you are like myself and like Kevin, in a couple minutes we'll discuss it with him. This past weekend, the voice of the New York Yankees from 1951 to 1997, Bob Shepard, passed away. Now, if you have no idea who Bob Shepard is, I'm sorry, I'm going to talk, because it's my show for a minute. Or, sorry, it's Brad Dykin's show, I'm just lucky to sit my butt in this chair each week. He was nicknamed the voice of God, because if you ever went to Yankee Stadium or watched a Yankee game on the air, he was. Unfortunately, this morning, on what was my grandmother's 95th birthday, now will also be remembered as the day that the boss, George Steinbrenner, passed away here in Tampa at the age of 80. Yes, he was a jerk to many people, but as I said on my Facebook status this morning, us Yankee fans were lucky to have Mr. Steinbrenner as our owner, and everyone else in Major League Baseball was jealous as crap that they didn't have him as their owner. Because I really enjoy all the World Series they have accomplished since my date of birth in 1974. 7 world titles under George, a brand new beautiful stadium. We're going to miss him very much here. If you are a geek like the folks on Wednesday nights with Talky Talk Radio, then the name Harvey Pekar might mean something to you. He had a really cool comic book in the 70s, 80s, and 90s called American Splendor. It was made into a film a couple years ago with Paul Giamatti and Hope Davis. He unfortunately finally succumbed to a battle of cancer he had gone on with for years that actually was featured in American Splendor. So find that on your websites out there in the world. We also want to send quick best wishes to the original superstar, the man that everybody in wrestling steals from to this day, superstar Billy Graham, who unfortunately his health has taken a turn for the worse. He's been saying to people, unfortunately, that he has about a year left on his transplanted liver, and it has started to show signs of failure. He's undergoing testing and treatment at the Mayo Clinic, and we wish him nothing but the best. We also want to send our wishes to beautiful Bobby Eaton of the legendary Midnight Express. He was hospitalized recently in Arkansas with fluid around his heart. Apparently he had some weight issues from retaining the fluid, and he's been placed on diuretics, and we hope he gets better soon. Jim Cornette has apparently said he's spoken to him and hopes he'll be out of the hospital soon. Thanks to everyone that went to Acid Fest this weekend at the ECW Arena. The event drew about 600 folks and raised over $8,000 to help raise money for the expenses. Apparently John Cena got involved in this. I don't know if you guys have read this. He sent a spinner watch to be placed up for auction. And hopefully that raised some money as well. So, yeah, we're going to talk WWE. We're going to talk TNA. What was that? We've got Rob Conway on tonight. We've got Rachel Collins. She's claiming she may have a surprise coming on the line with her tonight. We'll see about that. Hopefully our audio problems have been fixed from last week where we had everyone in the free world wondering if we were being invaded by the Martians. I do apologize for that. At this time, he is New York-based. His column appears on Phil Strom's blog through the Poughkeepsie Journal, and we'll give him plenty of time to pub that. Ladies and gentlemen, the man, the myth, fellow New York Yankee fan, Kevin Scott joins the show. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here with us. I'm sorry to do this to people because everybody's going like, you dumb butt, you scheduled the show on the night of the All-Star game. I said, no, they scheduled the All-Star game the night of us. I'm sorry. We're every Tuesday night. I'm sure Major League Baseball's really concerned with my feelings on this. Before we delve into the wrestling, which I'm sure everybody wants to hear your thoughts on TNA and the events of this past Sunday, talk about, in your mind, I mean, you're like me, you grew up on Long Island in New York, you got the Mets there, you got the Yankees there, but what's been the vibe from your friends and colleagues over the passing of both Bob Shepard and George Steinbrenner?
Well, I think everyone to a man has been very respectful when it comes to Bob Shepard. He obviously, as you said before, is nicknamed Voice of God. He has a level of respect that, hello?
You're still here.
You're still correct. He has a level of respect that most people in baseball, unfortunately, never get to. I would say right now, and maybe this comes on my bias, Derek Jeter would be one of those guys you'd be able to say gives universal respect. On the other hand, George Steinbrenner, it's been almost pretty much 50-50. I mean, a lot of people will agree that they have utmost respect for his passion for winning, his love for the Yankees, because pretty much he was the Yankees, and that's everything that meant anything to him. Yes, he did have a couple of issues in terms of being banned from baseball twice for what was supposed to be, I guess, indefinite or lifetime. It turned out to be a couple of years each time.
Dave Winfield was really weird to see him talking on TV today.
That was bizarre.
He ran you out of town. He tried to blackmail you, dude, and now you're talking about him going, he was great, he was wonderful. I'm like, you're a dumb saying that, man.
That was the most bizarre interview I've listened to in quite some time. You could hear that he was still very bitter about the situation, but I guess trying to tell the company line.
Right.
But then you have heard all the stories came out today where people said, you know, obviously he's known for firing Billy Martin more times than anyone should ever be fired from a job. But that after the players left the organization, whether it was Ron Guidry or Steve Howe or Dal Strawberry especially, he always reached out to them and helped them out when they were on their, you know, the lowest moments. So, like, I've heard so much about his charity work today for the first time because he was a guy that tried to keep that away from the public eye. I've gained a lot more respect for Steinbrenner today. And his death is just, it's not real yet.
Right.
Because, I mean, he's the Yankees. I don't know how else to explain that. But when it finally does sink in, it's going to hurt a lot more.
Oh, I'm sure it will. And as you mentioned, his charity work, I'm here in the Tampa area, and it's all over the place. Phil will be on later on. He does work with the Poughkeepsie Journal, so he was covering the story for the paper, and we'll talk more with him in a few minutes here. I know you were not able to attend the Brooklyn house show, but did any of your friends check it out? And what was, we had Anthony Castellano on from Newsday around the pay-per-view that was on Long Island, and he talked about the media and the way it was being portrayed. Any friends go to attend it? And what was the TNA exposure other than Velvet Sky slapping a Hot 97 radio guy around?
Sadly, that is the only thing I've heard from anybody.
Seriously? That was it? Damn.
Pretty much. Most of my friends are strictly WWE fans, if fans of wrestling at all. The Brooklyn show I really wanted to go to when it was first announced. As getting closer, I saw the lineup, and quite frankly, the matches that were interesting I've already seen several times. So the idea of going from Long Island to Brooklyn for that was, it wasn't as big of a deal as it should have been.
Yeah, well, a big deal happened this Sunday where we had very interesting pay-per-view, and that I was all geared up Sunday night when I watched it with the WrestleTalk radio crew and then talked on the show with them after it. And we're watching the show and I'm going, there's got to be a point where this show's going to suck. And I couldn't find one. The only thing I possibly could find was the biker chick who is Tara, isn't Tara, don't know. The double finish on the Motor City Machine Gun match was interesting, but it's obviously setting up something that we'll see this week on TV, but we're in spoiler-free zone, so we can't discuss that. Overall, your thoughts on the pay-per-view, and was there a particular match that you were sitting there going, God, I can't believe they booked this, and was there one that you said, wow, that stole the show?
Okay, I'm going to start back up a little bit. The last couple of impacts, I will definitely give credit in terms of that they have slowly been getting better. It's the going back to maybe, I don't go all the way back to January, but say middle of March, there was a point there where I was wondering if they could finally get themselves out of this hole they seem to have dug. And recently they have. They've been putting on actually, legit matches. Sometimes the finish, whatever, but the action was good. They were giving the matches a little bit more than just the normal 3 to 4 minutes. Granted, I still have an issue with giving away big, pay-per-view potential quality matches for free. But at the very least, they've been trying to do something different, and I have a lot of respect for that. As far as the pay-per-view itself, I went in with very low expectations, so maybe that's why I enjoyed it so much, because this was the first one. This is probably the first show in quite some time that I actually sat and was, wow, this was worth the price. I didn't feel cheated or anything like that. I would go, yes, the women's match, I could have done without the swerve I think all of us were expecting just turned to something that, granted, we can't really talk about spoilers, but it just didn't make sense for how it was working out. The Motor City Machine Gun match is probably my favorite match of the night, just in terms of I'm a huge fan of theirs, and it's like finally, after all this time, they actually got the titles. Granted, the double finish kind of took away my enjoyment of it a little bit, but I was still happy with the final result. The match that completely blew me away was the AJ Kazarian match, where the mystery opponents come out, and first, of course, it's Rob Terry, where immediately I'm thinking, what are they doing? Nothing against the guy. I realize he's not really that well trained. Did he go to the 3D school? But he's pretty green. Let's put it that way. So I wasn't really expecting that much out of it. And of course, Samoa Joe comes out, and I'm like, okay, I love Joe. Hopefully, we
it's
can
just
work
got fun.
Yeah, I was like, okay, this might be an actual wrestling match, and it was. It was a very enjoyable match. Rob Terry was used wisely. I think they definitely they definitely hit his weaknesses, which unfortunately are plenty. And it worked out to be a very well match, very good match. AJ was, I hate to say it, but he was phenomenal as always. And I really was completely surprised by the quality.
Were you surprised by the Ultimate X match? Because we talked on Sunday that a lot of the endings just seem to come out of nowhere. And that opening match happened to just come out of, like, wait a minute, we're up, bang, on the ground. He quit? What do you mean we're leaving?
I've been trying to find out. Was he legit injured?
I haven't heard anything on either one of them being injured. Sir Rockin is our producer on the show. Have you, Rock, type up for me, have you seen any post-injuries on that? I don't think anybody came out of that show other than Sean Hernandez and his forehead and the rest of them being a little injured from going not only through a cage, but spearing himself through a cage to win a cage match. Both of those, I mean, they took a staple match of TNA wrestling and turned it kind of on their side, Kevin. You put this Ultimate X there, and then you teased on Impact. Yay, Matt, you know, Douglas Williams, awesome. What do you mean he's afraid of heights? He's afraid of heights, and
very
you book
Ultimate
X match. That's brilliant.
Yeah. I was very surprised it went that route. Especially, I believe he was in some kind of a ladder match before in TNA, so that was kind of interesting.
Absolutely. In case you didn't see it all, fans, quick rundown. Rob Van Dam is still your world champ, taking out Abyss, Jeff Hardy, and Anderson. The Nature Boy, Ric Flair, I can't believe I'm about to read this, submitted to the figure four leg lock to Jay Lethal. Your Knockouts champ now is Angelina Love, who probably should have never lost the belt months ago via the let's pull something out of a case. She took out Madison Rayne, and as we've said, the original, there were stories going around that this was possibly going to be Madison Adiosen from the Beautiful People on pay-per-view. That may not happen. Who knows? The Team 3D saga got more interesting with Brother Ray defeating Devon and Jesse Neal with the ECW originals, whatever legal term WTNA can call them. I'm not sure. I don't know if Rock or anybody in the room is sure. As Kevin just mentioned, Styles and Kazarian look like they're on their way to being the first two members of Fortune, taking out the very interesting team of Rob Terry and Samoa Joe. The Motor City Machine Guns finally fulfilled a several year, and I do mean several year, run to finally become the TNA World Tag Team Champions, taking out Beer Money. Matt Morgan lost his cage match to Hernandez. The X Division champ is still Douglas Williams. And you mentioned favorite matches of the night being the Guns and Beer Money. I think right up there was the two former collegiate athletes in Kurt Angle and the Pope D'Angelo De Niro. I know Kurt may have not wrestled at the collegiate level, but he was still an amateur, and Elijah Burke was an amateur wrestler as well. So I thought the two of them stole. This was a show. It was really weird, fans, and Kevin as well. Everyone, even on the Wild Talk Radio Network and Russell Talk Radio on Sunday nights, the OWW Genesis board, we're all sitting there going, okay, after Slammiversary, there's only one place to go, and that's down. And they didn't do it, Kevin. This pay-per-view was wall-to-wall. It was amazing. And I'm just sitting there kind of going, okay, Heyman wasn't there. Bischoff and Hogan never appeared once on camera. We know Ed Ferrara went home. Russo supposedly wants to be an executive producer, so who the heck's writing this show now? Is it still this? Is it still this Scott Conway kid or whoever his name is? I mean, who? If you had to give an A, B, C, D, F, or god awful, horrible, I'd rather jump off the Verrazano Bridge than watch it, what would you grade this pay-per-view?
I would almost want to give it an A, but I think it's mostly because my expectations were so low. I was expecting at best a C or D, and they completely blew me away. It's kind of like I know if I looked at it, you know, just on its own, I probably still would have enjoyed it. But there were three solid matches in a row. The main event, granted, the end, I could have probably lived with that. I wish they did a little better. But overall, the show was It was pretty good, especially by teenage standards as of late. I'm completely confused as to who I should give credit to in terms of what's been going on, but I think as you pointed out, the fact that Hogan and Bischoff had seemingly nothing to do with what was going on, it's really very interesting, all the rumors about Paul Heyman coming up.
Yeah. And Tommy Dreamer, because Tommy ran ECW for a while and did some WWE writing. He's Kevin Scott, in case you're wondering who he is. His colleague, Phil Strom, will join us in a few minutes here. If you want to jump on the line, 267-297-1397, you can Skype Sir Rockin if you're a part of the Skype network. You can also join our chat room at wildtalkradio.com. Hit the chat icon. You can also join us through OWW Radio as well. And we had some history happen this week, and it had to do with something I was honestly surprised that has not happened before. If you're a fan of the annual Pro Wrestling Illustrated PWI 500, and we had Bill Apthorn on a few weeks ago, he's the godfather of the event. If you pick up this coming issue dated August 3rd, the number one wrestler, and I know it's work, I know it's for the fans, but shock of shocks, the number one is, the real Mr. TNA, no, not Rob Van Dam, the phenomenal AJ Styles. In the first time in the magazine's 20th year of being done, he is the first TNA wrestling star to top this chart. I know it's a work, Kevin, but still, it's pretty cool to see AJ on that magazine.
I would still say, if I was to start my own company, I could take anybody in the world to be my first wrestler. I'm picking AJ Styles. The guy has everything outside of maybe mic work, but he has that it. He's the, you know, pure excitement. He can do the high flying moves. He can do groundwork. He could definitely learn to take some voice lessons. But he has leaps and bounds improved this year. Maybe it has to do with Ric Flair. Maybe it has to do with just it was his time. But he actually I don't want to say I can't. Really say he became a superstar in that aspect, but he definitely went up the ladder. Especially in terms of what he used to be, what he used to mean for TNA back when he was feuding with Jeff Jarrett all the time. Mm-hmm. He was always that guy that you wanted to root for, but as soon as they put the belt on him, it was pretty much, okay, that's the end of the story. There's nowhere to go from here. He was lame duck champion. Didn't really have anything where else to go after winning the title. Now he dropped the title to RVD. He's still a major player, and it's only he still has a great upside. He's a young guy, not sure exact age, still very young, has a lot more to give this business. And I'm very happy for him as being a longtime fan of his, even going back to his Ring of Honor days.
Absolutely. You mentioned wanting to be a head of a company. Well, the one of the heads of the company made the internet once again, and no, it wasn't for her Twitter account, teasing the greatest thing ever in TNA history. This is the second time this has happened in the last few years. Dixie Carter held a talent meeting yesterday in Orlando. Now, I don't know if it was taped like the previous one was, where she basically embarrassed everybody on national television. She did a segment with the fan, the talent before the deal, and several sites, including ProWrestling.net, our website at OWWOnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, reported it, that she informed them, and I quote, they must tighten up their in-ring work, and noted that they were essentially spoiled because they have the luxury of being part of a taped show which can be edited. Guys were fuming, according to one company source, about her remarks. Now, for fans that aren't aware of it, Dixie Carter has never stepped in a professional wrestling ring, and I know a lot of people are going to go, well, what does that matter to anything? She doesn't have to be a wrestler to talk wrestling. Well, I've taken bumps in a wrestling ring, and I know, goddammit, it hurts like crazy, but when you come from the world of country music, I've still never kind of gotten the correlation of it, and I know I'm supposed to be a little TNA-friendly due to other stuff going on this network, but does this irk you at all that the president of the company, who's not a wrestling person, is going to wrestling people and telling them you need to do this, this, and this? Shouldn't this be a Jeff Jarrett situation or Terry Taylor or someone who's involved in creative doing this, or do you think she hits it home better because she's Dixie Carter?
it's a difficult situation because her title dictates that she should be doing it. But as you pointed out, I have a very hard time accepting her telling people like AJ or Samoa Joe or Kurt Angle, or quite frankly, even Rob Terry, that they're doing something wrong in the ring. On the flip side of that, I hate to say it, but I kind of agree with what she said, only because the last couple of episodes of Impact, there have been some incredibly sloppy wrestling, and not just in the knockout matches. That one, you know, knockouts, granted, it is what it is. I can understand when, you know, a move might not look that great. But there have been moments where, whether it's Jeff Hardy, RVD's match against Samoa Joe, there were moments where it was like, ooh, this doesn't look good, especially when you add the fact that they can edit these matches. So if they're editing the matches already, and this is the best they can get out of it, maybe she had a point. Granted, she probably should not have been the one to deliver that point.
Speaking of pay-per-views, the next one is Hard Justice on August 8th, and quite possibly, hopefully, we'll see a rematch of Abyss and Rob Van Dam. But this note came out today, and I can't really give it a particular site to say, hey, we scored it from them, because it actually got emailed to me by someone who I will not say, that they're, TNA is not a publicly traded company, fans. So they don't have to spill their guts like WWE does. The last couple pay-per-views, according to a source friend of mine, it says that TNA is generating anywhere around the highest number they've gotten is about 10,000 buys. Nationwide, worldwide. Now, probably going back to January, February, they were averaging around 7,500 as a top number. I know this is probably the big loaded gun question of the night, but is Paul Heyman the solve all to get these pay-per-view numbers up? Is it just imploding the writing room and that's starting at ground zero once again? Because they've done it several times. I mean, is he the solve all to all this? Is it just, you know, as Gabe Sapolsky used to say about Ring of Honor, I never really wrote anything, dude. I just put Wrestler Ray with Wrestler B and they did the stuff.
My feelings on Paul Heyman is that he, as long as I'm talking about dealing with checkbook, the guy's a genius. He can put two guys who really have nothing going for them, and whether it's some kind of strange chemistry that happens or if they believe what he's telling them, it works out. I have utmost faith that if he went to TNA, at the very least, the shows would be better. I don't know if that would translate to pay-per-view buys. Hopefully it would. But it would actually be better than the current product. The strange thing about that whole situation, of course, is that right now you have Hogan and Bischoff, which still not exactly sure how much actual control either one of those guys have. But when you're talking about you brought those two in, so it was this big major change that was obviously hasn't worked out, and now you already jumped onto the next guy, what does that tell you about Hogan and Bischoff? This is a very awkward stage right now for TNA where they keep trying to go for that home run shot, and quite frankly, they have no one at bat. I don't understand how they could possibly keep going down the same path where they're hoping someone's going to be a huge savior. It's been Kurt Angle, Mick Foley, Hogan, obviously. It hasn't worked so far. Is Paul Heyman the difference maker? Crossing fingers. But how much of a difference can one guy actually make? I really don't know if this is going to solve their problem in terms of buy rate. Going back to 10,000, that's just a crazy number. I know, like, a lot of times, obviously, the internet, people can get the illegal streams, stuff does happen. You know, maybe people wait to see, you know, if their friend ordered it and probably watch it on a later date or whatever. But if it's a point where they can't get their diehard audience to pay $30 a month to watch their shows, obviously, there's a huge problem.
On that note, we're going to let Kevin go because he's got some stuff to do. Pub your blog, my friend. We love having people plug stuff. I know Phil will plug it as well in a few minutes, but plug your blog that you're a part of.
I appreciate that. Phil Strum with Gibson Journal has a blog called Under the Ring. It's at www.tojoslam.blogspot.com. at pojoslam.blogspot.com. I write TNA about once a week. We try to do the Impact Review in a timely manner, do the pay-per-views once a month. It's a lot of fun. I get to vent. And, Alan, once again, thank you for having me on.
All right, we appreciate having you a part of the show. After this break here on British Theme Night, we will have Phil Strum to come on and talk about WWE's new pay-per-view concept, Money in the Bank. This is Online World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be back after the break. Take it out, Mick Jagger, baby.
If you're looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans, then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis, it's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions, as well. There are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
Hey everyone, this is Sir Rocket, the host of CB Radio, which you can catch every Saturday night.
Whoa, wait, Rock?
Yes, Cindy?
Did you just call yourself the host of CB Radio?
I kinda did just call me the host of CB Radio.
Honey, everyone knows that you are just the producer.
Hey, I'm not just the producer, I am the host of this.
Oh my god, shut up! Everyone knows that I am the host of CB Radio, which you can check out Saturday nights, midnight-ish, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now, Rock.
Yes, darling.
This is where you tell everyone, I'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday.
Good boy.
Hey guys, Maverick here, the host of the only show where it's okay to basically say,
Umaga in Samoan means shriveled up monkey penis.
Now I know what you're thinking. Why do I come on here talking about being a genius when I have so many problems with my own show? Well, it's simple, folks. I'm Maverick. I'm not Albert Einstein, for God's sakes. But if you're looking for a show with outlandish opinions of wrestling and the WWE, TNA, and the NorCal indie scene, then tune in to Running the Ropes, Fridays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Espérate! Espérate! No todos! Escúchenme!
Ladies and gentlemen, this is former WWE superstar and ECW general manager, Armando Alejandro Estrada.
Everybody, listen to me.
You're listening to the Wild Talk Radio Network.
are back here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Welcome to British New Wave Old Wave Night. Yes, 24-Hour Party People by a band you all probably never heard of unless you saw the movie 24-Hour Party People, which was about the Factory Records label in London. That was the Happy Mondays. Before we get to our guest, Mr. Strum, we've got someone who wanted to jump in after he heard the Dixie Carter issue. So from the wonderful city of Cleveland, Ohio area, he's still in mourning over LeBron James, but we'll let him say his piece. The one and only Spug from Wrestle Talk Radio joins us. Good evening, sir. He's somewhere. Spug.
Can you not hear me?
I hear you now.
Okay. We're not mourning over LeBron James. Let's get that right now. We're mourning over him being an idiot and throwing the city under the bus. That's what we're mourning over.
Oh, so you're like the owner of the team going, "We're going to win a championship before he ever does. He took the curse with him, damn it."
One can only hope.
Hey, you said on the break you wanted to chime in on Dixie Carter's bashing of the talent.
I do, but I have a quick comment for you, sir.
Uh-oh.
And the city of Cleveland is also in mourning for another reason today, and that is because the loss of George Steinbrenner.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not forget he is an Ohio boy.
Ohio State alum, I believe, or his wife was.
He's an Ohio State alum,
mm-hmm.
And he's from the North Ridgeville area, I do believe.
Oh, nice.
But which is a fine suburb of the city of Cleveland. But at one point in the 70s, before he bought the Yankees and built the evil empire over there in Manhattan,
evil,
he had attempted to buy the Cleveland Indians and was going to build it here. The catch point, though, was that the Muni Stadium was extremely run down and was in need of repairs, and he wanted the city to build him a new stadium.
And Jacobs Field's not bad.
Jacobs Field is not bad, but this is in the 70s, mind you. This isn't in the 90s.
Of
this
course.
Is in the 70s. And he eventually ended up buying the Yankees and not buying the Cleveland Indians, and we all know how that turned out. But I wanted to give my best wishes to the Steinbrenner family and the Yankee fans, because I know you're a Yankee fan. And I had no issues with the boss. And I wish you guys well in your mourning, and he will be missed.
Absolutely. They did a nice tribute to him before the All-Star game, which if you're watching that, listening to us, is nothing, I think going into the bottom of the third. So you're like everyone else that's been online. Give your thoughts on Dixie Carter basically calling everyone on the carpet for the second time in I think about a year and a half.
She has no right to do it. Even as the owner of a company, she has no right to do it. Because unless she's ever strapped on a pair of boots, put on a pair of trunks, or climbed in the ring for even one iota of a second, she wouldn't have said the things that she said. She had no right to call out the talent who go out and do their job. It's not their fault when the writers and the crap people that she hires hamstring them. And, you know, it's like Kurt Angle, you're going to wrestle a mop for the fifth time tonight, and the mop's going to go over. And the mop just slept with your wife and is doing heroin in the ring. Go. You know,
I don't know
they
if it
can't,
would get to that extreme, but it's close.
You know, they can't. They're only working with the hand that they've been dealt, and so I can't fault them. And so when she comes out and calls out talent like that, just keep your mouth shut.
Mm-hmm. At this point, I want to bring on the gentleman who is our one of our national correspondents dealing with World Wrestling Entertainment. Spug's also going to chime in on the WWE as well. From the Poughkeepsie Journal, he is Phil Strum. Good evening. Thanks for taking time out of your busy day. I know you've been dealing with the Steinbrenner news for your newspaper.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on tonight, Alan. It's been a pretty busy day. It was actually the first thing I heard about when I woke up this morning. And we went right to work. We've had what's that?
Go ahead.
I was going to say we've had some great coverage on our website, PoughkeepsieJournal.com, pretty much all day today. We've had some. I was on the phone with Roger Kahn, the famed sports writer, earlier today. One of my other colleagues actually got Donald Trump's thoughts on Steinbrenner. We had a lot of good local content. So if anybody out there wants to check it out, you know, feel free.
One of the biggest shocks out of this coming week, this past weekend, was all of that stuff, but it also was possibly the end of the guest host. And what better way to get rid of the guest host is one of the most horrible. That's right, your friend and mine, Florence Henderson, was your guest host last night, and we had to sit through a match that had absolutely nothing to do with a pay-per-view, with Santino, Goldust, Kozlov, Kali taking on Regal, Primo, Ryder, and Steve Lombardi dressed as Doink the Clown.
I didn't know that was Lombardi in there. I hadn't read that. I've been told.
I'm not 100% sure. Both to Phil first, then to Spug. Out of everyone that you can recall, and if this is the end of it, which, you know, cross your fingers and pray to your buddy Christ at your local store, who was the best guest host and who was the worst in your mind? First to Phil, then to Kevin, to Spug, and chat room people, if you also want to chime in on this, who was the best and who was the worst of the guest hosts?
I think most of the ex-wrestlers did a pretty good job. I thought that, I thought Bret Hart was good. You know, actually, I thought Shaquille O'Neal was very good when he did it. I liked Bob Barker. Ones that I hated, Jeremy Piven was pretty awful. I'll have to say that. He really, I didn't think he lent much. I had other people tell me that they thought he wasn't as bad as I thought he was. And a lot of them just brought nothing to the table. That Al Sharpton, he was awful, and they did it in Albany. And if anybody knows anything about Al Sharpton, a lot of his biggest troubles have been in upstate New York in terms of defending Dewana Brawley and everything else. It's like, don't do it in upstate New York. If you're going to do it with Al Sharpton, do it somewhere else. I'm not really, the Henderson thing was no different than about the 12 or 14 other ones that they've done similarly to that, where they just throw comedy at the wall, and usually it's not that funny, and it's just a throwaway to get the guest host on TV. Are they totally doing away with the concept now? Or are they just doing it more sporadically now?
I think it may be a sporadic thing. Have you or Spug or Rock, have you heard anything recently? And go ahead, Spug, with your best or worst.
I have the answer to your question, and this is from direct from WWE.com, by the way. From comedians to politicians to musical performers to professional athletes, Monday Night Raw's guest hosts are some of past and present's finest entertainers. The WWE universe, therefore, can expect this trend to continue as more and more of the most popular celebrities are hopping aboard to serve as Raw's special host.
Damn.
That's your answer.
Man, I was really hoping it. It seemed like it, because they were getting worse and worse, and I'm figuring, okay, with this anonymous GM thing, maybe this would be dead, but sorry, guys, I thought of it.
It's not altogether a bad concept. It just depends on how it's presented, and the way they've presented them for the most part has just been throwaway comedy, because that's what the writers on Raw write. Some of them were good. I mean, some of them were actually entertaining. But just in terms of logic, it just doesn't make a lot of sense that you just let some random person be in charge. It also makes that you have a huge logic gap when it comes to the pay-per-views, because you have Raw brand matches and nobody's in charge, or I guess Teddy Long's in charge, or I don't know.
And to answer your question, Alan, I would have to agree with Phil that either Shaquille O'Neal or Bob Barker, probably my favorites, and by far the worst was Jeremy Piven.
But if he had done Ari Gold, would it have worked? Would you?
No, because Ari still would have called it Summerfest. when you screw up the name of a 20-plus year pay-per-view, you're ridiculous.
Hey, go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's really on WWE, too. They got to make sure they prepare these guys well. And it's on the performer, too. I mean, when Dennis Miller came into the Slam, apparently he showed up late, and they were trying to, like, brief him on what he had to say, and he just was like, you're trying to tell me how to be funny now? And it's like, no, we're actually trying to make sure that you present our product well on television. So it's kind of, exactly. I mean, some of the ones who really knew the product, like Freddie Prinze, I mean, at least they knew it. You know, right. Some of them are just totally going in cold, and that's the fault of both of them, really.
Our folks in the Wild Talk chat room agree a bit on Randy McWilliams says that Al Sharpton was the worst. He felt Piven was bad, but did a nice high cross body, and felt Ben Roethlisberger was good. So I'm guessing that was before his little Georgia strip club trip. Ustreamer 17956, love you for you to get a nickname in the room if you want. Felt that Shaq was good, Sharpton was bad. So, bye-bye, Al Sharpton. And I wish we could be saying bye-bye to the Nexus, but it looks like they've dug in, and they're here to stay. This past Monday night was, let's go around and see how many stars they can beat up who jumped them last week. Because you had them jump in, pretty much like every time we went to a commercial, it was like, hey, Yoshitatsu, bang, down you go. John Morrison, hi, bang, down you go. Oh, it just turned around. And, of course, Sheamus proving that he is the fastest Irishman in WWE history, running to, where's John Cena's locker room? And the ending of him, and it almost felt like the end of the show, Phil, was Sheamus standing in a ring with a chair going, if anybody's going to kick Cena's butt, it's going to be me, damn it. Your thoughts overall, since we haven't talked to you in a while, since the Nexus things jumped off, your thoughts overall on the Nexus as an angle, and should these guys be invading both shows, or are you fine with them being on just SmackDown? I mean, Raw.
I'm fine with them being just on SmackDown. I really like the idea in concept. I think it's a really good idea because you're basically taking something kind of like the NWO, but as many people have said, you're doing it with a lot of fresh faces. You're not doing it with Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. You're doing it with people who have never been on the national level at all before. So in that sense, I think it's been good. I think they've taken a bunch of missteps. I think it's still okay for now. They haven't really been in the ring that much, so none of them have really been overexposed to this point. I think Wade Barrett is really good on the mic. I think losing him would have been horrendous for that angle, and thank goodness he got his visa issues settled up. I'm still really curious to see where they're going to take it. I'm not sure they know where they're going to take it yet. I wouldn't be surprised still if Sheamus is somehow a part of it, because I've been looking really closely for the last couple of weeks, and he still has not yet touched any of them yet. Each time that he's supposedly been in the mix, he's always been chasing them with an object and hasn't struck any of them. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to see that that was part of last night, and it's all just part of a larger thing with him. I'm curious to see where it goes. I didn't really have a problem with anything that I did last night with the Nexus. It just was the usual stuff. I mean, I think they need to make it feel more spontaneous than they've made it feel to this point, because when it started, I mean, it really made you stop what you were doing and watch the TV. That first night that they broke the angle and, you know, they broke the ring and they had Danielson joking Justin Roberts. In the subsequent weeks after that, I mean, they have theme music now and it's like they're all on the roster, so it's not like they're fighting for anything. But I don't know how long it's going to take, but, you know, I'm willing to give it a shot. I mean, none of these guys have proven anything yet, so... You can't automatically knock them for being lousy if you don't let them get in the ring a little bit.
You brought it up, so we got to rock. Play me some Bryan Danielson music, baby. We got a Bryan Danielson news update.
It's the final countdown.
This is Bryan Danielson.
The final countdown.
Best wrestler in the world.
All right, we are 58 days from his 90-day deal going away, and if you're going to see him at events such as Evolve or Rampage for Wrestling in Georgia or the recent Chikara event, and you're going, they bill him as Bryan Danielson. Why is that? He's the American Dragon, damn it. Well, This news item came out when he originally signed with World Wrestling Entertainment last year as he was finishing his dates with Dragon Gate USA and other promotions. He apparently signed over the rights to the American Dragon. So, unless he resigns with the WWE kids, you're not going to be seeing Bryan Danielson anymore. If you were watching, American Dragon anymore. Now, if you watched Monday Night Raw like a lot of us did last night, you noticed a couple more changes to the montage at the beginning. Additions, very surprising additions. Classy Freddie Blassie, Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, the legendary Gorgeous George, and Harley Race were added. The most striking change apparently is the removal of Jim Ross, who has been taken out, and Michael Cole has been put in. Now, I don't know if this is 100% legit or not. This is just what some sites reported, Phil and Spug and fans, that Ross was supposedly removed because he appeared on camera at UFC 116 2 weeks ago in Vegas doing an on-camera interview with Ariel Helwani of AOL Fanhouse. And he's responded on his Twitter, which I'm not getting one. I don't care what you say, Spug and Abunadine. No worries about being edited out of the WWE Signature Open. I'm proud of my work, and it was time to update the Open. Let's face it, times changed. I know it's not a news item, but I kind of wanted to just put that out there. Is that the way they did it with Hogan? He's out. Ted DiBiase's in. Is this like the thing? Don't screw us, and we'll take you out of our opening montage.
Well, I think that, oh, go ahead.
Sir, you're the guest. Go ahead.
Oh, you're a guest,
I was just
going to
say, you know, they have, Jim Ross was taken out of that montage last night. There was, and I'll say this, Michael Cole is technically the lead voice of the company right now, and he was not in that montage at all. I mean, and he has been in the company for some time, so it was kind of strange that he was never even in it to begin with, because he probably should have been, because he's been calling matches for, what, now, like 14 years. So, I'd be surprised if that was the reason, that because he was on TV at UFC or because he did some online interviews, because, I mean, Steve Austin was with him and he's still in there. The Rock was with them and he's still in there. I don't know if Goldberg's in there, probably isn't. But, I'd be surprised if that was the reason why they took him out. But they've done things like that before, so I guess it wouldn't be completely shocking. But certainly his voice should probably be in there. It's the voice that I most associate with, at least, you know, the 90s and forward era of WWE, much like, you know, my childhood is mainly Gorilla Monsoon and Vince McMahon. So, and I think they're both in there, too. So that wouldn't, I guess it wouldn't surprise me if that's why they took them out, but I think that would be a pretty silly reason to do it.
He is Phil Strom of the Poughkeepsie Journal here on Online World and Rest Radio. The voice that's about to cut me off, which is totally fine because we like people doing that here on this show. We're not editors. We're not censorers or anything. Spug of WTR has joined us tonight, and we're very appreciative of him being here.
I apologize for cutting you and Phil both off.
We're fine.
I have a bit of a delay, so I apologize. What I was going to say is, first of all, Alan, I demand some Depeche Mode Personal Jesus on your British New Wave night.
Well, it's an old wave, new wave. We've been playing Depeche for a while, man. Maybe we'll get to them later.
It's a Personal Jesus. And second of all, it's not a big deal that they take JR out of the intro, even after he appeared at UFC 116. When Brock Lesnar's first fight in UFC, Austin was there, Angle was there, Undertaker was there. They showed, I think, a good 8 or 9 professional wrestlers who were either with WWE at that point or had been. And WWE didn't say anything about it or take those wrestlers out of the intro, did they?
No, I don't think so.
See? People
it's like
to read.
This is Robbie McAllister showing up at the Impact Zone, you know?
Oh, that was weird. Sport. That was weird, I'll give it that.
I mean, it's not like it's direct. I mean, yeah, they are direct competition, but they don't acknowledge them as such. It's not even the same, you know, it's not really the same genre. I mean, it's they compete for the same dollars, and if they want to acknowledge him as competition, then acknowledge him as competition. But I think that would be silly if that's the reason they took him out. I don't know. It's got to be something else. I mean, I can't imagine, because if you're going to take Ross out, I mean, Steve Austin was all over that show too. It was hard to watch any crowd shot of, you know, even at the end, right? Brock walked over to their section and hugged every one of them, and Paul Heyman too.
Before we let you go, we've got to delve into this Sunday's Money in the Bank pay-per-view, where we're not only going to see one Money in the Bank match, we're getting two. Raw's got Randy Orton, The Miz, Mark Henry is the newest person, Chris Jericho, Evan Bourne, Ted DiBiase, maybe Maurice, maybe not, John Morrison and Edge. Either one, first to Phil, then to Spug. Pick me a winner for this, and why are we even doing two matches?
Oh, gosh. Well, you got to do two matches because you can't just call it Money in the Bank and then have one match, because that would be, I guess you'd have to have two anyway, because you can't just have one signature match, I guess. And they always like doing two, one for each brand. On the Raw side, I've told a lot of people that I think The Miz could win the world title before the end of the year, and the way they've been pushing him lately seems to indicate that they're pushing him in a more serious direction. So I guess he's my dark horse. But do I think he's really going to win the match? I don't know. I guess the safe pick would be Randy Orton, but I kind of see The Miz winning the Raw one. On SmackDown,
You got Matt Hardy, Drew McIntyre, Dolph Ziggler, Kane, Christian, Kofi Kingston, Cody Rhodes, and I can't believe I'm about to say this. The Big Show is going to try to climb a ladder. Give me a winner, Phil.
Big Show's been in one before, though, hasn't he, at WrestleMania? I think anybody has been in one at this point, except for maybe Triple H. Putting Drew McIntyre back in that match seems to make sense that he'd win it. It seems like they are kind of teasing something with Christian now on SmackDown, but that's probably not really going to happen, because I know better than that, because I actually watch wrestling. I'd have to say Drew McIntyre. I've really liked what they've done with him the last, this past week with fighting Kofi Kingston, having the segment with Teddy Long. They seem to have some long-term commitment to that character. I think he was slated to originally win the Money in the Bank at WrestleMania anyway, and then they changed their mind. So I would assume that he's probably going to win it on the SmackDown side this time, may even cash it in, could even cash it in that night if Rey Mysterio, somehow retains. I could see Rey being a nice vulnerable champion to lose in the main event.
Spug, give me your pick. I know who you picked on WTR, but has your picks changed since then? Give the fans the Raw and the SmackDown.
Must I?
Pretty please with sugar on top.
Pick somebody!
Besides Maurice. I want Maurice to win Money in the Bank just so she could talk in French, and I gotta flip to a dictionary going, huh?
Wait, she
should be climbing a ladder, too.
Wait. A chick's wrestling in the guys' match?
No, but I think that would be funny. I think it would be neat for Maurice to just suddenly climb up there and have a Ted DiBiase Sr.-like screw moment with going back to the main event TV show with Andre and the Hebners. I think it'd be funny.
I'm gonna go with Randy Orton in the Raw match.
Okay.
I just think he's due. Plain and simple, and I hate everybody else. and in the SmackDown one, I'm going to go with the Big Show.
So you really think there's a ladder strong enough to hold all 400 or 500 pounds of Paul White somewhere out there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Of course, this is a situation where he's going to need two and climb up one with one leg and one with the other.
I think he's going to build a scaffold and walk across the scaffold, to be honest with you.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Now, what's the size differential with Big Show and Mark Henry? I mean, Mark Henry's in the other one, and he's 415 or whatever he weighs these days.
Yeah, he didn't look. He was in the one at Mania, and we were just sitting there going, that ring better be reinforced. We're against the clock right now because we've got a guest coming on in a couple minutes here. Before you go, mention to everyone once again the name of your blog, how they can find it, and any upcoming interviews you may or may not have going.
It's Under the Ring. It's on www.poughkeepsiejournal.com/blogs, or you can get it through http://pojoslam.blogspot.com. Not really any interviews right now coming up. A couple of things that might be happening that I can't really say right now, and The blog is probably going to be going through some cosmetic changes in the next little while, too, so look out for that. We're always, you know, covering pretty much anything we can wrestling-wise and trying to keep everybody as updated as we can. And, you know, just appreciate the opportunity to come on this show as often as I have so far.
All right, we appreciate it. Phil Strum of the Poughkeepsie Journal, as we go to break, don't forget your numbers, 267-297-1397. You can Skype Sir Rockin'. Spug's going to stick around because after the break at the top of the hour, former WWE superstar and current NWF heavyweight champion, the Iron Man, Rob Conway, will join us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Bring on Joe Strummer and the Clash, baby.
Quit holding out and draw another breath. Something's calling and I don't want to shout. But while we were talking, I saw you nodding out. London calling, see we ain't got no hide. Except for that one with the yellowy eyes. The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in. Engines stop running, the wheat is going thick. A nuclear error, but I have no fear. Cause London is drowning out.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talent today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Bret
Derry.
Janice McDowell.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Bret the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Booger Wickerman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
So, every day I get all these emails here at CindySin.com. Let me read you the latest one I got. Dear Cindy, Cindy, I just wanted to say you are such an awesome person. And, wait, Rock, didn't I tell you to stop emailing me? Oh, this isn't from Rock. This is from someone named Steve. Anyway, if you have any questions about dating, relationships, or sex, email me today by going to my website, CindySin.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tim Stein here to tell you about a brand new podcast debuting soon, exclusively on the Wild Talk Radio Network. The History Of will take you on a fantastic journey as we look at some of the most famous rock groups, funny people, and actors and actresses of all time. Utilizing the video abilities of Ustream as well as the lossless stereo sound of internet audio, The History Of will bring a totally new experience to Wild Talk Radio. So make sure that you join me, your host, Tim Stein, as we take a look at the history of some of your most favorite people ever. Make sure to keep a lookout for this brand new webcast coming soon, only to Wild Talk Radio. Over the past year, WrestleTalk Radio has held many great debates. We have determined who's the greatest intercontinental champion of all time.
Remember this! Nobody beats Mr. Perfect!
And even the greatest WrestleMania match of all time. Starting July 4th, WrestleTalk Radio goes down south to find the all-time greatest WCW champion. It's the WTR Great Debate. Hear how it goes down every Sunday night right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Now bring mine up on it!
Well, well, well. It is I, the quintessential stud muffin, Joel Gertner, and you're listening to the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Rob Howe for Judas Priest, bringing us back here in Online World of Wrestling Radio. The numbers, 267-297-1397. If you're just joining us, where have you been other than watching a 1-0 All-Star game? I just need them to win so my Yankees can get set up so we can win another World Series and get it over and done with. If you live in the state of Indiana, anywhere in the state, especially in the Evansville area, you have seen this man defend his NWF, which is New Focus Wrestling, heavyweight championship on many an occasion. And in the last few years, if you are a fan of OVW in the Kentucky area or World Wrestling Entertainment, he will sound very familiar to you. He is known as the Iron Man. Rob Conway joins us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Good evening to you, sir, and thank you for joining us.
I appreciate the introduction, but as a true champion, I have to let you know that NFW is for New Focus Wrestling and not NWF. But not one to correct the host, but just letting you know, when you're the champion of an organization, then you pay close attention to what the letters
are. I apologize, sir. Hopefully, I'm sure this won't be the last time you will correct me tonight.
Well, you know, I like to keep you honest.
Not a problem. We'll get into talking about the event that you're a part of this Saturday for NWF in a couple minutes here. In case you want to chime in.
Or NFW, depending on how you pronounce it.
NFW, yes, sir, at New Focus Wrestling. I got it.
That's right.
I got it. I'm going to get it right because I know if I don't, you're going to come through the phone line and knock me out. If you want to join us, an ego trip would be useful
right about then.
Exactly. If you want to join in with Rob Conway, 267-297-1397. If you're on the Skype network, you can Skype Sir Rockin'. If you're a part of our Wild Talk Radio chat room, feel free to ask him anything. Just remember, let's watch the potty mouth because the big boss isn't a fan of it. For fans that aren't aware of it, you had a very long journey to World Wrestling Entertainment. Take us back to where you grew up in the Midwest, that one day your brain all of a sudden clicked on and said, I want to beat people up for a living and get beat up by them. And how did you come to even meet Danny Davis, basically the mind behind OVW?
Well, I grew up in New Albany, Indiana, which is right here in the Midwest, which is was where everybody watched the USWA wrestling, which featured Jerry Lawler and Jeff Jarrett and Dutch Mantel and guys like that, more so than in the Northeast where they watched the WWF. So Danny Davis was on that show, and I grew up watching the show every Saturday, but never thought that, you know, a guy from New Albany would have a chance to be a professional wrestler. So got into sports, later lifting weights, and then when wrestling got really popular in the mid-90s, people would just come up to me and ask me if I was a wrestler because I guess I looked like one. By chance, driving on my way to the gym, I saw a sign that said the Danny Davis School of Professional Wrestling, and they had a show on Sundays. So that's pretty much, I drove by that sign for like 9 months, like wanting to stop in there and talk to him, but never thinking that, you know, it was never the right time. But finally I did. I stopped in, talked to him, and talked to him two or three times before I actually made the commitment to doing it. And then once I trained in the ring one time, I was hooked.
How long after you had actually been a part of OVW did World Wrestling Entertainment, or WWF maybe at that time, how long did they actually take before they said, hey, we like this guy, we want to sign you to a developmental deal? And for fans that aren't aware of it, explain to them what a WWE developmental deal entails.
When I first started wrestling in OVW, there was no such thing as a developmental system. There was no way of getting signed and then developed. You were either good and they signed you and you started on TV. So I started in 97, and then around 99 is when they started the developmental territory. And I actually they started in an OVW, and I was there and working out in the ring every day with guys that had developmental contracts. And then it was just a matter of time where they were getting to see my work every week. So I ended up getting signed to a contract in 2000. A developmental contract is basically you're getting paid a minimal amount in order to learn to wrestle. So you're training in the ring for 2 or 3 hours a day and learning how to do promos on the mic. You have to stay in, you know, really good physical condition and be ready for them to call you up to TV at any time. And then when you get to television, then you have an opportunity to make more money. But it's basically getting your foot in the door and actually getting paid to train. So, I mean, to me, it was the greatest thing ever. I mean, any amount of money they'd offered me at the time would have been great because I've been actually getting paid to do what I was already doing.
The name Nick Dinsmore, unfortunately, to a lot of fans, will forever be labeled with Eugene. But you got to be a part of a tag team that had many different names with him. The one that I always remember when I lived in the Nashville area, I got to see some OVW tapes, and one of the names that I think was around was Lords of the Ring. Talk about being a part of that tag team, and what were your thoughts when he got called up to the roster and they said, all right, you're not Nick Dinsmore anymore. You're going to be this guy called Eugene, and you're Eric Bischoff's cousin or nephew or whatever he was.
Well, originally I'd met Nick when he was in high school before he started wrestling and before I started wrestling, and because we lived like 10 minutes away from each other. And then he started wrestling before I did, and when I first decided I wanted to join the school, I just called him on the phone and asked him a bunch of questions about wrestling, and he wouldn't tell me anything. So I had to join the school, and when I did, me and him had a similar look. We were built about the same, and Danny Davis decided to make us a tag team. And in OVW, we were just Nick and Rob. Nobody ever gave us a name. And then we went and started wrestling on the weekend. We would go to travel together up to Nashville and wrestle for Bert Prentice for Music City Wrestling. And he gave us the name Limited Edition, which we didn't have a choice in the matter, but, you know, it was better than Nick and Rob, I guess. And then when Jim Cornette became part of OVW, he's the one that labeled us Lords of the Ring, and by then we'd already been working together for, like, you know, 3 or 4 years. So as a tag team, we pretty much knew what each other was doing. We had similar athletic ability, and then that progressed to where we actually wrestled each other probably 200 or 300 times.
Wow.
Literally. And then then I got called to WWE to become part of La Resistance, and then he was in OVW still for about another year as Nick Densmore. Instead of being a clean cut, short hair, you know, all American guy, eventually grew his hair out and quit shaving, and he actually came up with the Eugene concept.
Oh wow.
You know.
Not sure many fans even knew that.
Yeah, he's the one who came up with it. But initially his idea was more of a, like the Rain Man character, where he knew wrestling really good, but wasn't really that good at everything else. And then WWE kind of turned it to more of a kid-friendly, you know, almost like a doink without the makeup type of character.
Mm-hmm.
But he managed to do it really good, and his very first match in the WWE was against me.
267-297-1397 is the way to join us here with Rob Conway. You can also Skype Sir Rockin, or you can do like Ustreamer 18258 did in our Wild Talk Radio chat room. He'd like to know, who did you find to be your toughest opponent to work with in terms of stiffness or unwillingness to do stuff in the ring?
I would say the toughest opponent that I ever worked with, and it wasn't due to anything that, no fault of his own, just because of his sheer size, was Nathan Jones. He was just so much bigger and stronger than everybody else that when I got in the ring, I was literally thinking to myself, I may get injured in this match.
Oh, wow.
Because he was just so much bigger and stronger and didn't know his own strength. I mean, he might shake your hand and hurt you. That was by far the most challenging opponent just because of the sheer size and strength and of the guy.
I have a question for you.
That would be Spug joining us, guys, in case you forgot who he is.
You, through your career, have worn some fairly colorful attire. And I just wondered, do you have any sort of grudge against WWE for making you wear those BDSM shorts?
No, because I'm the one that came up with the idea in the first place. And they didn't make me wear them so much as I came up with the concept. But, you know, some of the trunks I liked and they looked good, and others I had made, and then after I wore them once, I thought, what was I thinking? I mean, you try a lot of things to stand out, and that's the thing, is sometimes you wear stuff and it's like, does it look great? Not necessarily. Will people be talking about it 3 years after you're done wearing them? Yeah. And that's kind of the way I was thinking, is who wears see-through trunks? You know, who wears sunglasses when they wrestle? How many people have a Fu Manchu and sideburns? But when you get done, they might not remember that a guy did a certain suplex, but they would remember his look.
Hey, I dig the Fu Manchu and the sideburns and the glasses. It was just the trunks. I was like, really?
Well, now we know who the designer was.
How many people like those trunks? There's quite a few.
Really?
Yeah.
You made mention before that you had been in ODW for a while. I believe it might have been 5 or 6 years. Was that WWE choice to just say we really like him but we want to season him a little more? And do you feel that it made you a better performer in the ring and on the mic before you debuted with La Resistance?
Well, I'd already been in OVW for 3 years before they even had before I got a contract. And then once I got a contract, they had people who they'd signed before me that got called up before me. And that's kind of, usually back then, that's kind of the way it went, is that as you got signed, they had plans for you. So, like Randy Orton and Brock Lesnar and Batista and Rico, they all got signed before me, and then they all got called up to the active roster before I did. And then it almost became as if it was your turn. Like, they really weren't, you know, in a hurry to bring guys up, depending upon how long they've been in developmental. So that's kind of, back when I signed, that's kind of the way it was, is that you, after you'd been in developmental for like 2 or 3 years, it was almost like they're either going to bring you up or they're going to release you. You just don't have it. But one of the things about guys like me and Nick, Dinsmore, and then the Bashams, they were guys who started out here locally, and we were considered to be good wrestlers. And when they would bring newer guys in that maybe were 6'5 and 280 pounds and hadn't really wrestled, that even though we could have probably already been to the main roster, we could work with them in the developmental and get them ready faster because they might have had a more marketable look and size than what we had.
Mm. He is Rob Conway joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. The numbers are 267-297-1397. You can Skype Sir Rockin, or you can join us in the Wild Talk Radio chat room. As everybody knows, before you dove off on your own as a solo act, you debuted a Monday Night Raw sitting in the audience dressed as an American service person. What was your initial reaction when WWE's offices came to you and said, okay, you're coming up, and here's what we're going to do with you. You're going to be a part of this French gimmick called La Résistance with Sylvain Grenier, René Dupré, and you're going to end up going at it with the Dudley Boys.
Well, the week before that, I actually was going to debut. I had long, curly, blonde hair. And they already had me set to debut against Tommy Dreamer. And they were going to call me either the Franchise, which was already taken, but they were going to use it anyway, I think, or the Golden Boy. And I was going to be paired with Stevie Richards and Victoria. And that was what I was going to debut all the way up until like 6:30 that Monday. And then they came to me and said, we've decided not to do the match. So once you think you're going to debut and go on the road and be a part of Raw, then to hear all in one day, you're on the road, you're active, you're debuting on Raw, to, hey, you're not debuting, then anything sounds good after that. And then when they told me that they're going to bring me back the following week and they thought they might have something that they considered better, and then they sat me down. I came back that following Monday. They fitted me with the outfit. They set me down in the chair and cut all my hair off.
Ooh.
And I debuted and, left the Dudley Boys laying on Raw and joined the World Tag Team Champions. And then the next week came out at SummerSlam and caused them to win. So it ended up being a pretty good turn of events for me.
Mm. What were they like to work with? Those two guys, because I've heard good stories, I've heard bad stories about Sylvain and René. What are your thoughts on the two of them as performers and as people?
Well, as performers, they were both fantastic at being French. I mean, that was their deal. I mean, when we go out for our matches, the main concern was being La Résistance, not, hey, go out there and we want you guys to be Bret Hart and Lou Thesz. So it wasn't, hey, you guys need to focus on your wrestling as much as the gimmick of being anti-American. And they did a really good job of that. I think they brought me into the group because I've been wrestling a lot longer than either one of them, and I could be more of the workhorse in the match at the time because René was only 19 years old and Sylvain had only been wrestling for about a year.
Oh, wow.
So they both spoke French and could wave the French flag, and I had been wrestling for 6 years at the time. And, I could be join them and actually have more heat than them because I was an American that was going against America. So I was more or less brought in just to stabilize the actual wrestling while they were fantastic at, getting heat for just speaking French and having the look. I mean, they had actually had a look when they walk into some place that you wouldn't like them because they just, between their accent and the way they looked, good looking guys that were well built. Young guys that hadn't really paid their dues in the business, so everybody's like, man, who are these guys to be the World Tag Team Champions? And the fans, could feed off that, same as, anybody else. They just see it. Like, what are they doing at the top? And it was a natural heat.
You got to do something that not that many people do. You got to do two things at the same time. You got to compete in Madison Square Garden and got to be involved in WrestleMania 20. First off, the WrestleMania experience in its own right, especially being the 20th anniversary, had to be, you know, pretty cool there. But take that and then take Madison Square Garden, because as a native New Yorker, to me, that's it. I know you got the old place the World Class went with, and you've got certain arenas like in Evansville, the Coliseum, that was USWA's building, and then is CCW's building. Sorry, Eric Acker, not with us anymore, but it was one of my places to go in Nashville when I lived in Nashville. But talk about WrestleMania 20 and also just the aura of the Garden itself.
The first thing was, is I'd never even been to New York City before. So just
really? Wow.
The trip to the city, the night before we had a show, I believe, in Connecticut. And Coach actually drove me to the train, and I took a train into the city. So my first experience coming to the city was on one of the trains. Like, so the things I saw on the train on a ride from, you know, 12 o'clock at night till about, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning was an experience in itself. So then getting there and getting to the hotel and just being in New York City for the first time, you know, and we were there for a week before the show. And then just the city itself can be overwhelming when you're from New Albany, Indiana. Just the hustle and the fast pace and how much more expensive everything is, too. I mean,
oh yeah.
I went to breakfast one time. It was three of us, and we all got steak and eggs, and it cost $99. I was just like, "Holy cow!" And it was just a diner. It wasn't like we were at, you know, a 5-star restaurant. So just it was just that part was kind of overwhelming in itself. And then the day of the show, realizing that you kind of made it when you're wrestling at WrestleMania at Madison Square Gardens. I mean, if you had to pick a time where you think, you know, there's three things kind of that make you feel as if you made it. Being in WrestleMania, being in a video game, and having an action figure. I mean, you do those three things, and, you know, you pretty much made it about as high as you can get other than being like the world champion. And then going to Madison Square Gardens and it was unbelievable just thinking about all the things that's happened there over the years. And just, it's something that you think that can never be taken away from you. It's like you made it. So
I was spoiled. I used to go to house shows all the time, and I went to New York Ranger games and Knick games and St. John's games and WWE events. And I've talked with people like Midian, Dennis Knight, and I even talked to Roddy Piper in a print interview I did. And even he said of all the years that he wrestled in the industry, that building, even if it wasn't the original going back to the 1920s of the Garden, it's still the same building that had, you know, the fight of the century with Ali and Frazier and the Knicks and all that stuff. So I know where you're coming from. I was spoiled. I used to go to that building all the time and just go, I'm in heaven.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty awesome, you know, and then to get to come out in the packed house, have tons of heat. I mean, it's just, you just feel, you know, just WrestleMania in general, but being there and as soon as I walked through the curtain for my match, the two guys standing there that said, hey, that was a great match, you know, was Pete Rose and Donald Trump. So,
whoa.
I mean, those are the kind of people you bump into when you're at Madison Square Gardens that you don't see every day when you live in Indiana.
I have a question sort of along the line of balance, but it's involving another famous pay-per-view that you were a part of.
He's coming back. His mic's got a quick issue there. Sorry, Rob. There he goes.
Am I better?
Yeah, you're better. Yeah. Let me give the numbers real quick one more time, because this seems to happen a lot. We have these great guests, and my chat room and my listeners all of a sudden disappear. He will talk to you. Yes, he's intimidating in the ring, but he will talk to you. 267-297-1397. If you don't want to pay for the call, Skype Sir Rockin. If you're in our chat room, stop being quiet. Feel free to ask him anything, as you've seen. He took a question on his ring shorts, man. He's not afraid of anything. So, Spud from WTR.
You'd be surprised how many shows that I go to when people just look over there, and then when they finally come over, I'll say, "Well, you act like you were scared to come and talk to me," and they're like, "We were."
See, we've got a picture of you up on our Ustream line right now, and I'm looking at you, and you know, I've got a six pack like yours underneath my barrel chested exterior. I'm sure I do. But no, I had a question kind of along the lines of Alan. So you took part in another very famous pay-per-view just a short little time after WrestleMania 20, ECW's original one-night stand. And for all of us, who grew up watching ECW in our teenage years, it was a very special night. What was it like to be there and see how rabid those fans were for those guys in the ring?
Well, first of all, I felt completely out of place. Like, they didn't want us there. The fans legitimately just hated us. They just didn't, you could tell they wanted it to be pure ECW. They didn't want like a WWE version of it. So when we came out, I mean, it was legitimate. We hate you. And if we could get our hands on you, if we could stab you, if we could punch you, if we could choke you, they would have wanted to do it. And it was that type of atmosphere. Like, they are so passionate about the original ECW that they just didn't want to. It was that kind of an atmosphere. Like, we wish you weren't here, and please just leave. That's what we got out of it. I mean, that's what we were all looking at each other like, man, these people legitimately hate us, and they don't want us here. So, in a way, it felt really good because we knew whatever we did when we stood up or turned our back on the action. I mean, they were up there looking at us the same as they were looking at the guys in the ring, because no matter who was a fan favorite that night in the ring, they were all fan favorites, and the real guys they hated were sitting up in the stands watching, and that was the Raw and SmackDown brand.
Now, you at the ECW pay-per-view, you were taking part in sort of an invasion anti-ECW angle. Do you personally, looking back on it now, feel that WWE should have kind of stayed away from that and let ECW have their night? Or were you glad to be a part of something like that in that angle?
Well, I mean, I was glad to be a part of it because it's a little bit of history. And at the same time, WWE had to be a part of it because they owned the brand. I mean, the old ECW was gone at that point, and WWE owned it. And WWE is in the business of promoting their own company, not a company that was essentially out of business and that they revitalized. So, I mean, they had every right to do what they did, and I think that in hindsight, the ECW fans should appreciate the fact that WWE bought it and then revitalized it in any form that they did, because if they hadn't, they would only have memories from it, and any younger guys or new kids or new fans would have never got to see it. It would have been like World Class or WCW or stuff they'd only heard of or seen some new, you know, YouTube videos, not to mention how many more wrestlers got an opportunity to wrestle again and have a job because the WWE decided to take ECW, that was more of a regional promotion, and make it worldwide by them promoting it through WWE.
He is the Iron Man, Rob Conway. Our producer, Sir Rockin, had a question. He wanted to know what your take was on WWE's stance on tag team wrestling, and did you feel like, as a part of a tag team, you reached your full potential as a superstar?
I think La Resistance could have kept going. I mean, we never lost our heat. So as far as the tag team goes, I felt like, you know, I could have done more in the tag team division, because when we started in WWE, there was a lot more tag teams. And then after WrestleMania 20, I think every tag team, for the most part, that was in our match got broke up when they did the draft. I mean, even La Resistance got split up, but there was two of us that remained of the three. So for about 2 years, the main tag team in wrestling was La Resistance. Because if you look at after WrestleMania 20, we stayed together, at least in part, and we actually had to build the teams that we went against. Because before that, there was no Tajiri and Rhino. There was no Rhino and or Tajiri and Regal. There was no Eugene and Regal. There was no Hurricane and Rosie. I mean, they came along after WrestleMania 20, and we had the Heartthrobs. All those teams were new, and the only constant in the tag team division was La Resistance. So I felt like, and we did a good job of maintaining our heat, building other teams, and our heat never died off. The only reason they split us up, I believe, was because they wanted the heat that we had to go to Muhammad Hussein.
Oh, yeah, there's another name out of the past. Bob Holly's done a couple interviews lately, being that he was like a figure in the locker room that many people kind of were looked at as a quote-unquote locker room leader or enforcer of the head office. For someone like you that had been in the business for a while before you even stepped in a WWE facility to train, let alone be on their roster, truth or rumor on that situation that people like The Undertaker, Bob Holly, Ron Simmons, and John Layfield were these locker room enforcers? And what your thoughts on that whole situation?
Well, those guys are veteran guys that came into the business before there was a developmental. Those guys paid their dues on the road, and then by the time they got to the WWE, the newer guys came in, and it was like an unspoken... You just knew who the leaders are. You know who's been there a long time and who you have respect for. And as long as you paid your dues in the business and you came in, like I never had a problem with anybody because they knew I'd been wrestling for 6 years before I even got there. And I was somebody that, was easy to work with and showed up on time and, didn't have, my ego was out in the ring, not in the locker room. So wrestling has a tendency, like I think a lot of sports, to police itself, and that's just what happens. I mean, if somebody comes in and they're new and they're not good and they're arrogant, then they have a way of either weeding themselves out because they just can't hack it, or everybody's just a little tougher on them, behind the scenes until they give the respect to the veterans that the veterans deserve. And usually, I mean, every locker room you go into, if you came to a new Focus Wrestling locker room and a newer guy's come in, you generally know who's been there for a while, who worked hard to get where they are, and who you give respect to. Who you say, hey, would you want my chair? Because you've been wrestling for 20 years and I've been wrestling for 6 months. Things like that. That's just common sense amongst people who are in the wrestling business.
Now, you've been in the ring for a very long time. And it's probably been a while since you've been in a hot, dirty, dusty gym all day training. But let me ask, what was your favorite and least favorite drills to do during training?
That's a good question. I'd have to really, the things that I didn't like to do, I think, were just meaningless bumps where you already know how to take these bumps, but you're just taking them for the sense of repetition. Because I believe you only have so many bumps in your life, and you hate to use them up in an empty building in front of no people. And at first, it's not something you think about, your first year, your first 2 years, but as you're into it and you're training still and you're in the developmental and you've been wrestling for 6 years and you start to think, man, I enjoy matches, practicing matches, enjoy learning new things, but just the repetitiveness sometimes of doing the same things that you're already good at, but that maybe hurt the longevity of your career. So just taking you know, taking multiple backdrops when you already know how to take it. But there's always that chance that there's a board up in the ring, or the guy giving it to you doesn't give it to you right, and you could maybe get injured before you even get in front of before you get an opportunity to be on national television.
Now, as I said, you've been in the business a long time, and you've had your fair share of time on the road. Do you have a favorite road story or prank that you've pulled on anyone on the road that you can share with us?
That you can turn into PG rated or PG 13.
That's another fantastic question. But as far as pranks go, I always say I don't like to rib, and I don't like to be ribbed. You know, it's like I would always watch other people do it and get a laugh out of it. But I tell you something that's pretty PG, but it's funny, is when the Spirit Squad started on the road, the one guy, Mitch, his role in life in that team was to do the megaphone, or the cheerleading megaphone. And just about every single show, at some point, that the lip part of the megaphone of his would end up in the toilet. Every
show.
I almost
swallowed my soda.
No matter where he had it, I mean, if he left it for a second, somehow or another, it would end up in the toilet. And there's no telling what other things might have happened to it that I didn't see, and I don't want to know. But he'd have to clean that thing every time before he went out there, because somebody had got a hold of the Spirit Squad's megaphone.
Well, at least it wasn't Davey Boy Smith peeing in Yoshi Kwan, Chris Champion's hat every time he was working for WCW, but it was close.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's pretty PG, but it's still something that you knew it was coming. You didn't know when it was coming, but you knew it was going to happen, because he couldn't sit there and watch a thing, you know, all day.
Rob Conway joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. You were a part of another memorable angle that probably will get shown over years and years and years. You crashed the Raw Homecoming Legend Ceremony that I believe was in Dallas, Texas. And you got hit, and I mean hit, by some of the legends of the business. Who was the stiffest of all of them, and what did you think when they said, "We want you, of all the character, all the heels we've got, we want you to crash the party"?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I remember thinking was, the night before at a house show, I'd gotten headbutted in the face and had 14 stitches between my eyes that were all crisscrossed, and I'd bled all over the ring and even got on the ring announcer. So the next day at TV, when they said I was going to do that, I was trying to figure out how I was going to cover up that big, all those stitches, so that when I came out, I didn't already look like I'd been beaten up. You know, I wanted to look good on TV and not be like, hey, I want to feel sorry for this guy because he's walking out and looks like, like Frankenstein with all these stitches. So once I found out what I was doing, you know, I was trying to get the Band-Aid that was the same color as my skin to try to cover that up, and then I had my sunglasses on. So on tape, you can't even tell it, but I mean, my forehead was swollen out 2 inches and I had stitches. So I mean, that kind of puts a little bit of a dent in your normal high confidence level when you're in that kind of pain. But the idea when I got there and they said, you're going to do this, I was just, at the time, I was like, man, I haven't even met some of these guys. This is pretty awesome. You know, there was Von Erich was there, and Dr. Death, and Superstar Billy Graham, and Greg the Hammer Valentine, and Pat Patterson, and Hillbilly Jim. I mean, it's just a list of guys that, you know, unbelievable. Jimmy Snuka, I mean, Mae Young, everybody who was a legend for the last 30 years. So the first time that when I found out, I was just like, wow, you know. It was hard for me to be disrespectful to them, you know, as a person. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, these are legends. But then, you know, I was like, had to remember as a character, you know, I mean, that's was my deal. You know, I was pretty much into myself and didn't care about the history of wrestling, and I didn't care about anybody that wasn't in good physical condition. If they had any shortcomings, I was going to point them out, because at the time I prided myself on being 98% fat free.
Now you've worked with quite a few legends, Ric Flair, Jim Duggan, just to name a couple. But you had a short-lived couple of matches with Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, and one with Shawn Michaels on Raw. And he has just recently retired. What was it like to be in the ring with someone of Shawn Michaels' caliber?
It was really easy. I mean, it was when you go out there and you know the guy that you're going against is one of the best professionals, I mean, it makes your job a lot easier to walk out. I mean, yeah, you're a little bit overwhelmed that, hey, this is Shawn Michaels, but the reaction that he got, we had a ton of heat. So when we come out, everybody's doing this every time. So you compound that with him being as popular as he was. I could have probably just sat there in the ring and he could have pointed at me and people would have booed, and I could have pointed at him and they would have cheered. So it made it, the reaction is easy. You can actually do a lot less moves and get more reaction because he was so over and we had so much heat. And then the idea that he's so good kind of just makes for a much more enjoyable match.
Now, you made reference to ring psychology just a second ago with the pointing at one another. You could have done the pointing with one another gotten a lot out of the match doing it that way. What do you think of today's younger wrestler not wanting to put in the work and learn the psychology of the business and learn the psychology of working a crowd and your opponent and just going for the glitz and the flash and the, you know, being spot monkeys in the ring?
You know, I don't really think that newer guys are that way. I think that there's not a lot of veterans out there to teach them how to do anything other than the moves. You know, they can learn the moves from just about anybody, and they can watch them on TV and learn how to do moves. But, you know, you put two young guys together, and they can go out there and have a lot of action and do a lot of cool stuff. But without a veteran guy that knows how to do less and get the crowd involved, then, I mean, it's not their fault they don't have more experienced trainers and more experienced guys to go against. It generally, you start at a school, and there's 10 of you, and you're all new, and you end up wrestling each other a whole bunch of times. And that's who you feel comfortable with. I mean, if you think about it, there's not a lot of veterans in wrestling that are still, if they're either passed away, they don't wrestle anymore, they're in the WWE, or they made enough money that they just quit wrestling. So, I mean, when you look at a show, you know, say an independent show, generally it's mostly local talent and then maybe one or two guys that you've seen on television. And a lot of times they put them with the guys that are already experienced in that particular independent organization, or they wrestle each other.
Now, you're listening to OWW Radio with Alan Wojcik and myself, the Spud Guy from Wrestle Talk Radio. If you want to call into the show, the number is 267-297-1397, or you can Skype Sir Rockin, and we're on with the Iron Man, Rob Conway. We want to thank you for joining us again, sir. Very appreciative of it.
I appreciate you having me. Just, I always think now like a trainer or like an experienced person or like a someone who's running a company as opposed to just being a wrestler. That's why some of the answers that I give might be more complicated than just one or two words or in character.
We love it. Absolutely. We're very appreciative. This gets blogcasted all over the place. So there could be some kid sitting there going, God, I want to be a wrestler. I'm scared. And now they've got you as a voice that can talk with us. And Spug is one of the few people that does radio shows that actually is a trained performer and competitor. So he's that's why he's picking your brain, so to speak.
Your brain. I am. I'm not gonna lie though, I have given up the squared circle for the octagon.
Ooh.
Yeah, my first fight's in October. I'm all excited. But
good luck with that, man. That's hot now. It's something that's new and it's exciting, and you know, I think a lot of people watch it. You know,
I've watched it for quite some time, and my final straw, and I'm not gonna lie, my true ambition was to never really be a part of the WWE because I knew I didn't have the look. I'm 5'8 and barrel chested. I'm really not going to do much against the Triple H and Undertaker or so on and so forth, you know. So I enjoyed being local and going, you know, kind of around the Midwest and just having fun being with friends and being on the road and enjoying my time in it. And my final straw came when a kid who was literally 3 days out of training broke my tailbone and gave me a concussion with 7 stitches in the top of my head.
Well, that'll do it. That'll make you want to try something different, that's for sure. It's not very fun when you get injured by someone that doesn't know what they're doing.
But you were talking about, you know, experienced legends and veterans in the business, you know, not being there to teach the younger crowd or a lack thereof. Who were some of the veterans as you were coming up through the indies and in OVW and even in WWE, who kind of guided you down your path and taught you the rights and the wrongs and the do's and the do nots of the business?
Well, originally it was Danny Davis. He wanted to originally train me, and then my first 6 months in the business, I consistently wrestled the hustler Rip Rogers, who had been around for a long time. And then when I went on to Music City Wrestling, while I was still wrestling in OVW, I wrestled against Reno Riggins quite a few times.
Oh, yeah, I know that name.
And
he's still involved.
Yes, he was a great wrestler and had a really good mind for the wrestling business. And then from there, that's when WWE got involved with OVW, and then they would send guys down, and I got to work with the Big Boss Man and Godfather, train, and then they started sending agents down. So I got to train in the ring with like Fit Finlay and Dean Malenko and Arn Anderson, and they would come down pretty consistently. Dave Taylor, they were always sending guys who were on the road or agents down to work with us on a consistent basis. So Dr. Tom Pritchard had a big part in helping me and all of the OVW guys. A lot of guys that have not only have experience but are actually good at helping young wrestlers. And so I was real fortunate. I mean, everybody that I named are guys that are considered to be great wrestlers and great trainers.
I've always idolized Dean Malenko and his submission style. And of course, you know, you have the enforcer Arn Anderson, one of the members of the most influential stable and group of individuals in wrestling history. You had to be a little bit starstruck working with those guys. I mean, what was it like to be in the ring with them and just learn from them and soak up that knowledge?
Well, first thing is when you get in the ring with them, you just don't want them to think that you're terrible. you when you're in there, you're thinking, man, I hope, you know, it's not even that you want them to think you're good. It's just like, you know, hopefully they don't come out and go, man, this guy's terrible. But then once you get beyond the fact that you get to know them on a first name basis and you get more comfortable being in the ring with them, and they know that you don't know what they know, and that's why they're teaching it to you. And then when you start picking it up, and then it makes you get more comfortable, and then the more they come down and see you, the more you feel comfortable around them, and then you ask more questions and open up. But yeah, the initial when you wrestle against anybody that you consider to be somebody you looked up to, I mean, that's your initial, is not even, hey, I hope he thinks I'm good. The first step is to think, I hope he doesn't think I'm rotten. And then get to the point where you hope that he respects your ability.
Sorry, my executive producer, my 8-year-old just ran in to say goodnight, so sorry. You, in addition to what you've been doing with OVW, from time to time, you've shown up on the NWA Wrestling Showcase television show with a friend of the network's, David Marquez. How did you come to be a part of the NWA, and what do you think of it as an overall product? Because I believe they're trying to get TV in LA. Are you still a part of it now?
Well, I want to be, and we still are on good terms. It's just that I'm in Indiana and they're in Los Angeles. Before, when we would do the wrestling showcase, it was based out of Las Vegas, and it was and I was flying in and doing the matches and doing color commentary with Dave Marquez, and then they were having arena shows throughout the West and the Midwest, and they were bringing people from all over the country. So that's when it was at its height. You know, I was working with them every show. And then the economy itself, you know, took a turn the last couple of years, and a lot of the arena shows went away. And now I talked to Dave about a month ago, and they're trying to redo they're getting fired up about it again there in Los Angeles. And the NWA itself is one of those names that's synonymous with wrestling. I mean, and I think the brand itself has stayed alive just because of a lot of hard work and the fact that they have promotions in almost every single state. So they bring all those champions and all the regional and state promotions together so they can have a national show. I mean, I think that it's just a matter of time until they make a bigger comeback, as long, you know, especially with Dave Marquez having a big part of it, because he's got a great mind for television.
Before we get to the event this Saturday for New Focus Wrestling, which you can get to by going to nwfentertainment.webs.com, you have your own website.
NFW.
I said New Focus Wrestling.
About some but you said NWF. I'm correcting you because I'm the champion there. And believe me,
I
have to remember New Focus Wrestling, NFW.
I understand. Speaking of focus, who designed your website? And talk to the fans just about some of the stuff you've got going on. You actually do motivational speaking engagements. Give the fans a rundown on what they can find on your site, how they can get to it, and the motivational aspect.
Well, the IronManRobConway.com is my website. It's fairly new, so it's not complete. There's going to be a lot more pictures and a lot more dates put on there as I get it to the webmaster. As far as the outside of wrestling endeavors, I get asked a lot of times to come to schools, to come to Boys and Girls Clubs. I go to, like, hospitals and things like that because, I mean, children in general and teachers, they're fascinated by wrestling. So that's something that when I go in, they're easy to get their attention. The website itself is also there to focus on outside of wrestling, which I'm trying to get into acting, which is a slow process when you live in Indiana. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you know, you have to go to Chicago or New York or Los Angeles. But because I still primarily wrestle, that's why I still live where I do, is because my passion and my life has been wrestling. And anything other than that would just be an outside endeavor at this point. But the website's been helpful. I've done a lot of, like, local television and local regional, like, morning programs and news shows and things like that to keep my name out there and get more experience as far as in front of the microphone, in front of the camera, outside of the wrestling. But that's where you can find the IronManRobConway.com is where you can find what's going to be happening here in the near future with me.
All right. And this Saturday's event is a exterminating hunger event. It is a canned food drive that I believe they're asking for 3 canned goods per minimum. And who are you going to be taking on this event in Evansville?
I'll be wrestling in some way, shape, or form Master Rich. Master Rich and I have wrestled over the past 4 months, and me being the champion and him being the challenger, and you'd think by now that they would come up with somebody else for me to face, but him being the top dog there, and he did pin me, which I think was illegal in a tag match the last time we wrestled, so I guess that's why he feels as if they feel as if he deserves another match with me for the championship.
Hmm. And I gotta ask this before you leave. Your website lists an upcoming production. What can you tell us about War Sport 2041 that I believe, is it Sci-Fi that got the rights to this thing? What can you tell us about this project?
Well, it's gonna be a mini series, and it's gonna be on Sci-Fi Channel. And they've told me not to mention too much about it because of the fact that they haven't let the storyline out or anything, but I'll be saying I'll have really short hair and I'll be carrying a weapon at all times. So you can kind of use your imagination. It's going to be action, that's for certain, but it's definitely, they're going to have some new technology in it that's going to debut, as far as like product placement and things like that. And the people involved with it are really heavily involved with the gaming and a comic con type of convention. So it's going to have more. It's going to be more than just a miniseries. I'm sure that they're going to have a miniatures game. There's going to be a video game. I mean, once it hits, it's going to be something that should be bigger than what I would have ever imagined when I first talked to them about it.
Sweet, more miniatures for me to paint.
Yeah, he's a part of a show on this network called Otaku Talk Radio that they basically do geek stuff, sci-fi, and that kind of stuff. So you just gave him and his show a lot of stuff to look forward to. He is the Iron Man, Rob Conway, joining us here. Thanks so much for being a part of this show tonight. Go into Evansville, see him, visit his website. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, Rachel Collins of WXCW will talk some women's wrestling. Online World of Wrestling Radio, we'll be right back.
But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel all right. You know I work all day to get your money to buy a thing. And it's worth it just to hear you say you're going to give me everything. So why on earth should I moan? Because when I get you alone, you know I feel okay. When I'm home, everything seems to be right. When I'm home, feeling you holding me tight, yeah. It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene. All this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talent today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Gary. Candice McDowell.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Give me back the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling. Online. It's the site the pro juice. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today. It's
have a certain passion. Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment. Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio or Anything Goes, or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons with the geeks over to Talk We Talk Live, all you gotta do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
Hey guys, Maverick here, the host of the only show where it's okay to basically say,
Umaga in Samoan means shriveled up monkey penis.
Now I know what you're thinking. Why do I come on here talking about being a genius when I have so many problems with my own show? Well, it's simple, folks. I'm Maverick. I'm not Albert Einstein, for God's sakes. But if you're looking for a show with outlandish opinions of wrestling and the WWE, TNA, and the NorCal indie scene, then tune in to Running the Ropes, Fridays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
So, every day I get all these emails here at CindySin.com. Let me read you the latest one I got. Dear Cindy, Cindy, I just wanted to say you are such an awesome person. And, wait, Rock, didn't I tell you to stop emailing me? Oh, this isn't from Rock. This is from someone named Steve. Anyway, if you have any questions about dating, relationships, or sex, email me today by going to my website, CindySin.com.
A moment you won't forget. Don't miss out. Tweet your friends right on their wall. Spread the word for a can't-miss moment.
Yes, I'm glad Rock's recording because this will be probably one of the only times you'll ever hear me say that I was actually impressed by Mr. Anderson tonight. He did very well. They set up the Jeff Hardy splash in the corner thing, and at the last possible second, Anderson gets up, grabs Hardy in a power slam, dropped him down for a quick two count, and I was impressed, sir.
Join Wrestle Talk Radio Sunday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, on the Wild Talk Radio Network at wildtalkradio.com.
This is the Godfather of Extreme, Rob Parks. Tune in every Saturday, midnight-ish, for CB Radio, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
My
Yeah. I know she's not British, but she's married to a guy from the British Isles. That is Mrs. Gavin Rossdale, Gwen Stefani, I've no doubt. And you're wondering, why are you playing that, dude? Well, Online World of Wrestling Radio, we do talk the big shows. We do talk the little shows. We talk everything here. We're going to talk women's wrestling, which got Spug very happy when he heard the voice of our next guest. She has wrestled for Chick Fight overseas. She has beaten up men for a long time. Has worked under the stage name of Pandora Box. She has also wrestled as Miss Rachel in the Nashville Evansville area. And she is the promoter of WXCW, which has an event at the Stadium Inn this coming weekend. She is Rachel Collins. Good evening, young lady.
Good evening, Mr. Wojcik.
Oh, yes. And she's coming
back.
I'm
not a Collins anymore.
So
I have to correct you. I'm not a Collins anymore. I'm a Falk now.
That's right. She is married to wrestler LT Falk. So all you men that just saw her going, yes, that's awesome. Damn. And we'll talk. Believe me, we'll talk about a TV show I'm working on trying to get you on in a minute, sweetheart. For fans that aren't aware of it, give a quick background just on how long you've been wrestling, because if you ever see Rachel in person at a show, you'll go, wow, she looks really young, and she'll tell you, yeah, her knees are about 80 years old.
It's very true. It's very true. I began wrestling at an extremely young age, but not young for England. In England, we tend to start young. I was 14 when I started wrestling in England. I'm now about to be 26. So I've been wrestling for 12 years internationally. I started touring all over England. When I was 17, I made my first tour of the United States, and I've been traveling the world ever since.
You did the first time we ever met, and my friendship with Rachel goes back to 2002 when she was attached to, we mentioned them earlier with Rob Conway, the former Yoshi Kwan in WCW, former member of the New Breed with Sean Royal, the one and only Chris Champion. And I know it's a sensitive subject, unfortunately, with you, but just talk about how the idea even came into your head of England's really great, but I want to go to America.
Well, I've been working in England, like I say, since I was 14. I started training and traveling all over the country, and we had Americans come over to do tours on the indie scene in England. And every time someone came over, hey, you should come, you should come. And Riptide came over, and she was really cool. And a lot of the guys came over, and he was one of them. And everyone just said, come over, come over. And then I got emails saying, well, come and work for me, come and work for me. And it just kind of transpired that I finished high school at the age of 16 in England. That's when high school finishes in England. I've been wrestling, you know, since I was 14. And then I worked for a little while at a shoot job and saved up a little bit of money and came over when I turned 17, and I've been coming over ever since.
What was the major differences you found in the British training as opposed to when you came here? Because, Liz, I've known this young lady for a while, and you were a part of, we were talking with Rob Conway about Master Rich, who is his opponent this Saturday. You were there at CCW events with Chris, seeing the training camp that he was running and Eric Acker had at CCW. What were the major differences you saw in the American style in person? Because I know you probably were a fan of watching shows over there when it was on TV.
Right. I mean, I didn't really watch the traditional British style until I got into the business. You know, the accessible wrestling to watch has always been the WWE, wherever you are in the world. So I was very familiar with that and the American style of wrestling. And then I went to wrestling school in England. The wrestling school that I attended was a shoot school, a submission wrestling school, that you had to be able to be competent on the mat and be able to hold your own in a shoot scenario before they would teach you things like running the ropes and bumping, you know, all that kind of stuff. The stuff that really, like, gives the business away. They would make sure that you would be able to do the legitimate before you could do, before you were allowed to, you know, learn the stuff that exposes the business. And then when you got into getting in the ring and learning the pro style moves and everything else, they never really pulled it. They would teach you how to do it, but it was almost never a work. Everything was cinched in real tight and hit real stiff and everything else. So everything that we were doing was essentially a shoot anyway. And then you come to America and you see the way that training schools are run here. When I first came, it was very much a case of anyone could pay and get into a wrestling school. And, you know, everyone was kind of babied from what I've seen in the American-style wrestling schools. It looked to be a lot easier, you know, a lot easier on the trainees and everything else. And, you know, that's how it's getting in England now. There's very few shoot schools now in England. It's very much more the American way of, and anyone can make money running a wrestling school. It's easier to make money running a school than it is to run a show.
Wow. Go ahead, sweetie. I'm sorry.
So now the American style seems to be, the American schools for the most part, not necessarily all of them, but the ones I've seen traveling the indie scene and in this country, it's easier. Not to say that you learn the business thing less, because really, when I came to the United States and I only had that British style, I was just murdering people left and right. And people would be like, "Damn, you're so stiff, loosen up.
I was witness to it.
It's a work, man. You're beating me up. And these are guys, big guys telling me this. You know, I was a 17-year-old
Bart Sawyer
girl having...
Bart Sawyer comes to mind.
Yeah. Well, Bart could take the stiff stuff. I mean, he was always three sheets to the wind anyway, so it didn't really, it didn't really faze him. But, you know, I come from the same school as Doug Williams, Johnny Storm, Jody Fleisch, guys like that. We come from the same school. And then also Katie Burchill, Katie Lee, whatever you want to call her, she came to the school after I started. You know, so we all come from that same school, and we all had to get out and find out, you know, how to work. We had to come to America and learn how to work American style, you know. So...
She is Rachel Collins, joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. 267-297-1397 is the way to join us. I'm Alan Wojcik. That would be Spug from Wrestle Talk Radio joining us here. He can be featured on Sunday night after the WWE Money in the Bank pay-per-view. You had a question. I know you pulled up their Facebook page, MySpace page, which Rachel will plug in a moment or two, but I know you got a couple questions there, Spugger, so go get them.
I do have a question for you. Now, you are originally from England, but you've been wrestling in Nashville for some time. Who has worse teeth? People from Britain,
you know,
or people from the South?
It's a pretty close call. It's funny, actually, the stereotype about British people having bad teeth comes from before the wartime, before we had National Health Service. Now we have a National Health Service and dental care is free. The old stereotype doesn't really apply. We all have pretty good teeth. We can have our teeth seen to for free anytime we want to, unlike the poor folks of Nashville and the Deep South in general. So, you know, I have a full set of teeth. That's all I'm going to say. They've all been chipped, and I've had to have composites and things like that. And And I've been clotheslined in the mouth a couple of times and things like that. But I'm carrying a full set of teeth. Thank God.
Well, be thankful for your full set of teeth.
I'm thankful. It's the little things that get you through a day. It really is.
At least I'm pretty sure you have a fully functioning tailbone, whereas I do not.
My tailbone is probably about 80%.
Yeah, I had a green kid break my tailbone one night. I was not happy.
I think I've done my own damage. I do a lot of sit-down maneuvers. So that's kind of my own fault, really. I can't blame anyone for my tailbone problems.
But you were talking about the differences between the schools in England and the schools in America, and there's a forum tag that I've seen a lot of people have, and I myself have it, and it's pictures. I think he's got Antonio Inoki, the original Rey Mysterio, and Stu Hart from Canada. But it says, you know, in Canada it's your tradition. In Mexico, it's a religion, and in Japan, it's something else. But in America,
yeah, I've seen it.
Is that? I mean, to the casual fan, that may be true. But someone working in the business, like you do, and I have done, do you think that it's true, or is there sort of a resurgence of more tradition-laden wrestling coming up through the ranks of wrestling today?
It's a strange dichotomy because you have the big televised brand, WWE and TNA. WWE more so, but TNA is following suit to a degree. Where they're making TV for the masses that don't necessarily understand work rate. They understand simplicity. You can't blind the masses with science. You have to give them what's the easiest thing to understand. But then there are fans that are a little bit more educated to wrestling and go and look towards the indie scene for those things, and it's a case of you can't please all of the people all of the time. But with WWE, it only helps. It's not going to help their bankroll to specify towards the minority. The minority then goes and looks to the indies for their particular style or whatever. But you go to the indie scenes in the old territorial areas, I mean, like Nashville has never really changed. Nashville is still pretty much the same style of wrestling that it's always been. You go, you know, any further south, and it's essentially the same thing. The when you go to the little towns in the south, and you know, pretty much all around the country, it's still the same. It's still the same style of wrestling that it was 30, 40 years ago. In the old territorial system, because there are always going to be people from that area that perpetuate that style, and the people understand that style. So in Nashville, you get that Tennessee style, and that's what the majority of the fans understand.
She is Rachel Collins, joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, 267-297. I butchered the number. Oh, my God.
267-297-1397. Yes, there you go.
There's a 888 number coming back. I promise you, we're getting the number back. I don't know how we're going about it. I think we're trading in some Deutschmarks or Barabons that we got from back in the day. Maybe we stole them from the set of Beverly Hills Cop. I have no idea. We're not trading in any children here. Come on.
Well, with my with my impending free agency from WrestleTalk Radio, Alan, they're going to be able to afford a new...
Now. We're not giving people publicity that don't deserve the time of day.
but anyway, I'm sorry. I had a follow-up question to her. I apologize.
Go for it, dude.
You're welcome. Carry on.
But, you know, you're talking about how, you know, things haven't really changed in the smaller towns. and you brought up this sort of cookie cutter image that WWE and TNA have brought to women's wrestling. And I remember watching people like Sensational Sherry and Wendy Richter and Fabulous Moolah and Mae Young, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on. As a woman's wrestler, are you offended by the bleached blonde, surgically enhanced women who flail around like epileptic children on the mat now?
Maybe deep down I'm more offended by it because I'll never be one of those girls. I wish I was the bleached blonde, surgically enhanced, looking kind of female. Maybe I'll get a lot further.
No, you don't, honey. You're gorgeous, and you've got the accent. You're good.
It's like you have to say, do I want my pride or do I want work? that's pretty much how it is. It hurts the business in general when you portray that the only female that can be in the ring is blonde, with her ribs poking out and, fake titties and everything else. Not that there's anything wrong with fake titties, if that's what you want to do, that's cool. But there has to be some kind of contrast to that available. Because, like I said earlier, you cannot please all the people all the time. There are a lot of people out there that don't like that, that like something else to look at. Which is why WWE has its token Asian and its token Latino and its token black girl and everything else. And a lot of the time you run into that thing on the indies too, to a degree, we were going to book this girl because she looks like this and, but how does she work? But that's the last thing on people's minds for the most part. But then you get, the more pure indie companies that really want to portray wrestling, and then you're into people that don't really care what you look like and just want to see how you work. And that's always a nice thing. That's how I try and run my company, and that's how I like to be treated for the most part, because I will never be able to fulfill that particular stereotype.
She is Rachel Collins, joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. The promotion is WXCW, which can be found if you go on to MySpace. They're working currently on a site. They're going to be at the Stadium Inn in Nashville, Tennessee. Rachel has also done some of the famed custom shoot DVDs, including stuff done by Lexi Fife. And you actually had, was it you by yourself or did April Hunter have something going on with that? Talk about the concept of the custom shoot. What exactly goes on for fans that are looking at the computer and listening and going, what the heck is she talking about?
What goes on with that is there are companies or vendors like Lexi's company, which is SlammingLadies.com, and you can go online and see when she's having a shoot and see all the girls that are available on the list for matches, and if you want a match between any of those two particular girls, you can purchase a match between the two girls and you can have as much input as you want on the match, and then you get a copy of the match. If you're basically playing to be matchmaker, and custom is literally what it is. It's how you want your match. There are customers that sometimes just want to see the two girls go at it and let them wrestle how they would wrestle. And then there are customers that want to send you a script with every single spot, written out. It's pretty much up to the customer, and that's what they do. That's what a custom shoot is.
Now you've been in the ring with some pretty heavy hitters in your career, and when you were here in Florida a couple of years ago, that was one of the main reasons you came to the U.S. was you were doing dates all around, and one of the days you were staying with me and my mom at the time, and I'm going, she's gonna wrestle Awesome Kong tomorrow, dude. Oh my god. What's it like being in the ring with Kia? And what did you, and as someone who knows Kia, which is her real name, we're breaking the wall for a minute here, but breakdown for us. First off, being in the ring with her when she turns on Awesome Kong, and what did you think of the whole thing that she ran into with Todd Clem and the F. Haiti and all that stuff?
First of all, being in the ring with her is a sheer pleasure. I would happily be in the ring with her every day of the week, twice on Sunday. She is just wonderful. There are very few girls as highly trained as she is in the business, and I have no problem taking that big back fist. She's just a pleasure to be in the ring with. She is really wonderful, and she actually unpopped my ears for me with a trash can in the match we had. I was still stopped up in the head and deaf from the flight that I'd just gotten off, like 8 hours before. Alan actually picked me up from the airport. We went home, I went to bed, and woke up first thing in the morning and went and did the shoot, and Kong actually hit me over the head with a trash can in the match, and I could hear again after that. It was wonderful. She's just great to be in the ring with. Anyone that ever gets the opportunity to be in the ring with her will testify to that. She's great, and she's a true professional. It's something that comes from her time being in Japan, and just as a good person. And I think the whole Bubba the Love Sponge incident was ridiculous. He doesn't need to be such a douchebag. And there are plenty of people that would have wanted to hit him. I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people that just pissed that she got to him before they did. But I mean, obviously you can't do that in a corporate setting.
She had no problem doing it.
she had no problem doing it in a corporate setting, and she, you know, whatever has happened, they, you know, it's really the company's loss to not have her, because she's just so credible and really lends a sense of credibility to any women's division.
I know I'm about to open
company.
I'm sorry to cut you off. I know I'm about to open a mega can of worms, because as Spug mentioned, you are a trained wrestler. You've been beating people up for years. And I know from knowing you as long as I have that you are a fan of professional wrestling, and being married now to a wrestler who probably has a tape library bigger than mine. Go overall with the product of wrestling today, the way that TNA has been doing the beautiful people gimmick, and then WWE came up with Lay Cool. As a performer, are you just sitting there going with the remote? God, is Desperate Housewives on? Can I watch Deadliest Catch or something other than this stuff? Or are you enjoying the current female product on TNA and WWE as a whole?
I don't really pay too much attention to the WWE product, because there's not anything there that really catches my attention. I don't really see any angles. They don't build any female angles. I know that, you know, the Alicia Fox girl and the other girl are feuding over the title, but there's no real actual angle there. There's no real writing going on. They're just having matches. Really, that's not really an angle to me. That's just throwing two girls in the ring because that's what you want to do at the time. The Beautiful People thing is actually a pretty smart angle in a way of, because they're using those girls as heels, which is a great, that's the same as having the pretty boy prima donna wrestler who carries the mirror to the ring and has the valet to take his, you know, his jacket off and all that. It's just a female version of that. And they're doing a good job of it in terms of the actual character development, playing the heel, playing the I'm better than you, I'm prettier than you. You know, they're really playing that mean girl character very well. They're very good at it. Their in-ring skills may leave a little bit to be desired. The only one of them that I know personally is Madison Rain. I've been around her a few times. She's a very nice girl in person, and she's improving a great deal in the ring from when I first met her, like, 2 years ago. But this is something that they're being given the opportunity to improve, which is what they need. And I believe their character development, at least, they've got that behind them. They've got that behind them, and it's just a case of them learning to improve on the in-ring skills, which is not something that you should really be watching someone learn on TV, but it's not ideal, but it's not as bad as it could be, because at least they have the verbal skills and everything to carry it off.
She is Rachel Collins, joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, 267-297-1397. Skypes are rocking if you want to get involved, or you can be a part of the Wild Talk Radio chat room, like Running the Ropes owner, the wonderful Mav, who is on this network on Fridays at 6 p.m., has done. Says, with the aesthetics in professional female wrestling, are new wrestlers discouraged from going far if they want to be really trained in the product? Or he's actually saying, I should say, discouraged from going mainstream. He may be hinting towards the issues that have happened recently with Maria Kanellis and Mickey James. Do you have a problem with them being Maria was a part of that Celebrity Apprentice show, and all of a sudden they're like, hey, guess what? You're gone! I mean, do you think that that's something, an avenue that, do you have a problem with that? I mean, I don't see it being a problem. And
It shouldn't be. Well, I think the WWE had run out of things to do with her anyway by the time that she had gotten on that show. A bit like the deal with Stacey Keibler, you know, doing Dancing with the Stars or whatever. They had just run out of things to do with her, and it was a case of a contract taking up money that they didn't really have anything for. And Mickey James doing her music, well, she's free to do her music now. I think she was tired of the job in general. I don't know what all transpired between talent relations and her personally, but that seems to be that she was tired of wrestling and wanted to do something else. I've never had anyone tell me, you know, you couldn't do anything mainstream. But in my situation on the indie scene, you've got to do everything you can for money. I don't know what the WWE standpoint is. I'd imagine that any publicity is good publicity. Mm-hmm. And they shouldn't really have a problem with the girls branching out if they have no problem with the guys doing movies and TV shows and things like that. It shouldn't really be a problem for the girls to do such either.
Right. I have a question for you, my dear.
He's back. The final score, Chipotle won. Spug nothing.
Indeed. Indeed. But I have a question for you, dear.
Okay, far away.
I was looking on your MySpace site for your promotion, WXCW. See if I can.
Right.
It's a lot of letters. It's, you know, I'm just a poor retard. I'm just a poor retard from Ohio, so we're not very bright up here. But I was looking at it, and I saw Mickey Knuckles listed as a worker with your company.
Uh-huh.
And recently, she had come under fire for an incident that was almost, I would say, as famous as the mass transit incident at a IWA Mid-South deathmatch tourney.
Are we talking about Mike Levy?
Yes, we are talking about the Mike Levy incident.
Okay.
What was your opinion with how they did that? And there's been various reports that it was a work, that it wasn't a work, that he asked for the whole thing, and so on and so forth. With the New Jack incident, the Mike Levy incident, and so many others that have happened throughout the years, just what's your general opinion on that? And Do you think that that's a good thing as far as the workers in the business trying to keep it sacred, or do you think it's a bad thing, especially, you know, with someone like that on your roster?
And she's wanting to talk because she knows New Jack, so feel go ahead.
Well, I haven't conversated with him in a long time. I've never discussed the thing with Mickey. I mean, I only know what I've heard, and I've heard all kinds of stories. And
have you seen it?
I mean, I've seen the deal on YouTube or Wrestling Gone Wrong or whatever it was. Things like that are pretty scary. I do feel strongly about keeping the wrestling business sacred, to a degree. I don't know that I would go that far. but you know, things happen in the heat of the moment, and stuff gets blown out of proportion, and then you have the Chinese whispers thing of, you know, it starts off, it was just this, and then it gets 10 people down the line, and it's turned into something completely different. Like I say, she and I have never discussed it, so I don't know from the horse's mouth. And, I mean, she and I are good friends. We're about to have a match here soon under PGWA, where she and I are going to go at it under hardcore rules. So
hopefully she doesn't break her leg again.
I'm really hoping she doesn't. She's gotten the all clear from the doctors and everything else like that, and she seems to be doing fine. She wrestled twice for me on my last WXCW show. She won't be making this one because of a prior booking. But like I say, she and I will be booked against each other here pretty soon, under the auspices of the PGWA. Which will be quite exciting because people just are so ready for her and I to have a match, and we're ready to have a match because we don't get the opportunity to do all the things that we'd like to do in matches a lot of the time. You have to turn yourself down a lot of times in the ring with a lot of the girls you encounter in this job. So it's nice when you work with girls that you can let fly with and not be scared about hurting anyone. And there's never any need to be scared of hurting Mickey. She's pretty hard to kill.
They do call her Moose Knuckles, so.
I love her dearly.
I've seen her wrestle, and I gotta say, I lost a little bit of respect for her after the Mike Levy thing.
It's gotten, you know, the snowball has started rolling, and things are what they are. And like I say, I've never heard from her herself what the deal was, so
It's not even the Chinese whispers or the snowball. It's the totality of the whole video. If you watch it from front to back, it was an IWA Mid-South death match. It's going to be violent like that. I get it. It's CZW. It's a niche audience.
Mm-hmm.
But the ending of that video with every one of those individuals that came out and put the beat down on him, and she got that one last good shot. I'm just like, you know, at that point, work or not, it's over. You just let it go.
Right. I understand that too.
But I have one last question for you, and it's on a
You don't have to limit yourself. You're more than welcome to ask what you want to ask.
But it's on more of a lighthearted note.
Okay.
You've wrestled all over and wrestled quite a few individuals, and I'm pretty sure you've had your fair experience of moves that you've didn't want to take but have taken for the team.
Mm-hmm.
Which one of these would you say no way, not doing it? The Rikishi stink face or the Gold Dust groin kick?
I was given both of them. I don't know. It depends whose ass it would be.
It'd be Rikishi's ass.
It would be Rikishi's ass, and I'll take the groin kick any day. I would I would definitely take the, was it the Shattered Dreams? Is that what it's called?
I think so.
That's what it's called.
I would take that one for the team, I believe.
We've talked up WXCW here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, in case you're just joining us. Where the heck have you been? Thank you for joining us here. Rachel Collins is here talking about this promotion. You've been a part of the business for years. What went off in your brain that said, hey, I want to create a women's promotion here in Nashville? Was it something that you and LT, your husband, had talked up, or how did it come to be?
It's kind of a, something that came into being by chance that, LT and I were working in Evansville, Indiana, and various places, in Indiana other than Evansville, where we were seeing Mitch Ryder a great deal. We worked
with
him. Love
me some Mitch Ryder. He's awesome.
That's right. LT actually ran a promotion for Mitch because Mitch has the XCW Midwest. And Mitch wanted a kind of cruiserweight based, promotion, which he called XCW Ground Zero. The LT was the mastermind for, he booked the talent, booked the matches, everything else. It was the greatest wrestling show that nobody ever saw because we ran in a town called Memphis, Indiana, at a flea market on a Sunday, early Sunday evening. We did not do great with attendance, based on the time and the location of the show, because the matches were fantastic. We had some really great talent. We had a lot of our Nashville guys come up and work for us, and we had guys coming from Indiana and Kentucky, and even further afield. We had a couple of Chikara guys come down, and, you know, we had some really great talent, and we're very proud of the product we produced. We just couldn't continue to run because we weren't making any money. But LT and I had talked to Mitch about various stuff that we were doing, custom shoots and all the matches I was having and things like that. And then Mitch came to us one day and said, I would like to run a girl show, but I want you two to run it. So it would be under Mitch's promotion or whatever, but it was us that was booking the talent and creating the card and making the finishes and everything else. And we did that. It was in Clarksville, Indiana. It was the first show on February the 11th, right before I had my baby that I didn't know I was having until I had it.
Oh, we're getting there. We're getting there.
Right. And we ran that show, and we ran, and Clarksville, Indiana was still under like a foot of snow, and we had all the girls come in, and I had girls coming from Ohio and Indiana and Tennessee and all over to come and do the show, and it was really good fun. I had a really good group of girls. It was really enjoyable. And we decided to run a second show there in Clarksville, which we ran on April 15th. And then we set a date for June 17th. Mitch said the next one will be June 17th. And now these were running on Thursdays at the skating rink in Clarksville, Indiana. Mitch came to us probably two weeks after we ran the second WXCW show and said, it's over and done with. We can't run that skating rink on a Thursday. We're not drawing enough people for the skating rink guy to make money on the concessions or whatever. He doesn't want to do any more Thursday shows. He'd rather run Thursday parties or whatever else. And on the way home, LT said, we can't run girl shows anymore. They're not going to let us run in Clarksville. And we got to thinking, and then LT said, well, shit, we have our own we have our own building. We run USWO in Nashville Friday and Saturday every week at the Stadium Inn. Why don't we just run it in Nashville?
Right.
So we set about finding sponsorship and support for the show. Ladiesports.com stepped in to handle sponsorship of the payroll, and we then had to go around and find local businesses to sponsor us and everything else. And we're having the show this weekend on Saturday. This will be our third show. I mean, we fought for a minute there. It was over, and then LT said, well, no, we'll run it in our own building. We just need a little bit more time. So it ended up being July 17th. We actually got married on June 17th. So we traded one event out with another.
I mentioned the TV show earlier. I am trying to get my dear, dear friend here, Rachel, on I think it's either Discovery Health, TLC. I want her on. I didn't know I was pregnant because I get a call from a mutual friend of ours after they worked an event at USWO. She says, I have good news, sort of. And I go, really, Lakeisha, what's that? And she says, Rachel's a mommy. The baby's name's Lizzie. She's doing wonderful. And the first words out of my mouth were, what do you mean she had a baby?
Yeah. It was all pretty crazy. I didn't obviously know. I had a match Friday, February the 19th. I was in Millersville, Tennessee, wrestling a luchadora by the name of Hecate. And everything was fine. I wrestled the match and went back to Stadium Inn to help finish with the show there. And then we went to Waffle House and ate dinner. And then I went home. And then I started to feel like the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. And she and I were teeing off on each other pretty good. I mean, really good. And I thought that she just caught me with a really good kick and busted something. I thought I had a ruptured spleen or my appendix or something. It was horrific. It was horrific pain. And LT said, well, you've never felt pain today in your life, so we're definitely going to the hospital. And he rushed me to the hospital, and we get to the ER, and by then I'm yelling and screaming. And I couldn't even cuss. I was in that much pain, I couldn't even fart. I'm yelling and screaming, and LT's telling me, kayfabe, you're too loud. And then they rush me in, and the doctor's checking me, and LT said something along the lines of, well, damn, Rachel, the way you're acting is like you're having a baby. And the doctor said, well, could she? And they're talking over me. I'm laying on the gurney screaming, and they're just having a conversation. LT's like, well, no, check her. And the doctor checked me, and he was like, oh, you're drowning. You're not just pregnant, you're in labor.
Oh, my God.
I said, excuse me. They rushed me up to the delivery room, and I delivered the baby within four pushes. She had gotten herself all the way down through the birth canal on her own. And then the obstetrician was just there to catch her, really. There it was. We had a baby girl, 8 pounds, 1 ounce, 19 and a half inches long. She was completely healthy. Nothing wrong with her at all. She's now 4.5 months old and growing like a weed and developing normally. And the doctors say she is just the perfect baby, a miracle baby.
And she's booked to work this WXCW event, by the way. She's wrestling AJ Styles' daughter or something.
Obviously, your daughter learned how to sell in the womb.
Well, the way Wolfie D was like, man, that baby knows how to talk. And then me and Miss Tiff were conversating about being on the indie scene and having to wrestle girls all the time that don't have any ring experience. And I said, damn, even my baby's got more ring experience than these girls, you know? And it's a shoot. I'm thankful that there is nothing wrong with her. It goes to show that pregnant women probably don't have to live in a plastic bubble. for 9 months or whatever. But my baby is completely strong and healthy. She's actually quite advanced in her development. They say she was a completely full-term baby. We're talking a full 9 months. The match didn't make her come on at all. It was her time to come. It had nothing to do with the match. And that's just how it's happened. And she's fine. She's perfect. We didn't have a thing for her. Luckily, the fans in Nashville and the workers really got behind us. We have a lot of people that care and sent us things and bought us things, and from car seats to blankets to diapers, clothes, bottles, everything. We're so grateful to all our friends and our fans, and it's still every day is still a struggle and a surprise right now, but you know, we're dealing with it. And she's definitely, you know, born into the wrestling business. We're talking about a third generation baby. Both her grandparents, Tony Falk, her grandpa, and her grandmom, Candy Hunter, Candy Kane, Nurse Candy, and myself and her daddy. You know, the poor child's doomed to be stuck in the wrestling business forevermore. But at least she has a head start.
She lives in Nashville. We can get her sent to Vanderbilt, and she'd become the greatest doctor ever.
No. I'm going to implore that child go to Ohio State.
But Rachel will get the reference because of my love for Eddie Izzard, depending on what part, where he's talking about what he wanted to be when he grew up, and he's telling the guidance person, it's like, you're British, scale it down a little. I'm like, yeah, but this child's part American, too.
All right, I want to live in a sewer then.
Right.
Aloha, aloha. Want to make shoes no one's ever seen.
The poor
baby is going to grow up in the wrestling, but she goes to every show. She goes on all the road trips. She's really exposed to the wrestling business, so by the time she can walk, I think
chicken hat in line at USW events, because I mean the chicken hat gets out of line. She needs to go over and smack that man.
Chicken hat is a law unto himself.
And if you have no idea what I'm talking about,
he's very nice to the baby.
And if you don't know, no idea what I'm talking about with that reference, fans, watch the early NWA TNA weekly pay-per-views, and you'll see along the railing a guy with a really funny, well, chicken hat on there, and you'll get the reference to it.
Yeah, Charles is a superstar. He's one of those people that really make wrestling worthwhile, because from the time that he enters the door to the time he leaves, he is 100% into the show. He's a believer. You know, the heels are the bad guys, the baby faces are the good guys, and he really gets into it. And I wish we had 100 more fans like him.
Before we let you go, give again one more time the date, the time, the location, and who's on this show besides you.
Well, it's going to be WXCW, and it's going to be Saturday the 17th in Nashville at the Stadium Inn. Bell time is 8 p.m. Doors open at 6:30. Ringside tickets are $10. General admission tickets are $8. Kids 5 and under get in free. We have Tasha Simone defending her WXCW championship. We have hometown girl Christy Ritchie. We have Tiffany Rocks, PGWA champion Tracy Taylor, Cameron Starr, Cindy, Amanda Ruffin. We have Nemesis. We have Angel Dust. We have Brittany Force, Fantasy and Fetish, DiBella, Jessie Bell. We've got a lot of girls on the show. It's definitely worth coming out to see.
Oh, I'm just going to ask and beg you that you come to Cleveland once. Because
I come to Cincinnati on and off, but I've never been to Cleveland yet.
All right, Cincinnati's 4 hours away from me, and they're mutants down there.
Oh, they are? Okay.
See, people from Cincinnati and Pittsburgh are mutants compared to the people from Cleveland.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah. You need to wear a hazmat suit when you walk into either of those two cities. In Cleveland, we breathe the sweet air of freedom here.
Yeah.
But no, I would really hope that you would come up to Cleveland. There are a lot of women's wrestling fans in this area, and I'm not talking the bleach blonde Barbie dolls that you see on TV fan. I mean, there are fans of, you know, Moolah and May and so on and so forth that are dying for good women's wrestling.
Right.
But just to go back to your daughter real quick, I have been a father for 4 years now. She's going on 5. And since this is your first one and she's only 4 months old, I'm going to give you a couple of little pointers. For teething, frozen waffles rule.
Okay.
I'm serious. You get a box of Eggos, stick them in the freezer, and when they're teething, just hand them to them. And by the time they thaw out, they're just jelly and mush, and you just wipe it off.
Right.
You can never have enough Disney Channel or Nickelodeon.
Nick Jr. on demand, baby.
There
watching
you go.
Watching Yo Gabba Gabba with Abby is hysterical. When you're here in a couple weeks, we'll get together and you'll just watch Abby watch that and First Be Band and all this stuff.
Ryan actually watches wrestling.
Doesn't surprise me.
The first wrestling she ever watched was Bret Hart. I think she likes the pink and black contrast.
There you go.
And she actually will sit and watch wrestling.
Yeah, my daughter
at a show
and I,
or on TV.
My daughter and I watch wrestling on Monday nights. That's our Monday night ritual at 9 p.m.
Uh-huh.
On the bed watching wrestling. But frozen waffles, Nick Jr., Disney Channel, and never, ever, ever allow them to finger paint. When you hear the phrase, "Daddy, I painted on my wall," and you know it's 8 a.m. in the morning, it's never a good thing.
Oh, that's duly noted.
All right. On that note, we're going to ask, stay on the line after we fade out. I want to just talk real quick with you about the upcoming events that you're up to. She is Rachel Collins. You can find her on MySpace at, is it Rocktastic Rachy? Is that your current
that's
name
right.
on there?
That's
you can
right.
find her
that's
that
URL.
Way.
You,
yep,
you can
you
find
also,
me as Miss Rachel or Rachel Falk also.
Yeah, Pandora Box is gone, kids. Damn, I love that character too. Yeah, she is awesome. Online World of Wrestling Radio has been brought to you by the lovely folks at Wild Talk Radio. They have shows all over the network. Tomorrow night, Otaku Talk Radio with Spug, Mace, and Will. No, it's Spug, Mace, and Omega.
There you go.
Got it. There is no Anything Goes this Thursday. The lovely Cindy Sin is on sabbatical. I think she's gone to the French Riviera for some sort of sexy time convention. We're not sure on that. Her website still exists, SYNDYSYNN.com. Friday, 6 p.m., Mav, who's been in our room all night enjoying the show, he's got a show called Run of the Ropes. Saturdays.
That show.
The Godfather, Rob Parks, if he's allowed out. And our super cool producer tonight, Sir Rockin', do a neat little show called CB Radio Midnight-ish. And then this Sunday, it's not 10 o'clock, guys. It's 11 o'clock. Wrestle Talk Radio will be on after the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. They are currently conducting another highly contested great debate, which you can check out on this website, wildtalkradio.com. It is the greatest WCW champion ever. And this week, I believe Ric Flair is involved. Is that right, Spug? Do you and Rock got who is the matchup this week?
Rock does.
Yeah, I know Ric Flair is involved. Last week involved Booker T, DDP, Sting, and someone else. Oh, yeah. That's right. This week is the number one seed, another number one seed, the Nature Boy Ric Flair taking on the, yeah, we're going to use his name. I don't care what anybody says. Chris Benoit. And then in the other matchup will be the Macho Man Randy Savage against the Total Package Lex Luger. Not sure how that choice got made up there. I want to thank Jason Dedrich, Brad Dykens, Tim Stein, Sir Rockin', Phil Strum, Kevin Scott, the amazing Rob Conway, Miss Rachel Collins for joining us, Spug for staying with us, even though the Chipotle fought back. From one lovely British voice to another, Kate Bush taking us out here on British Music Night here. Working on some cool guests for next week. OWWRadio.com, you can find the information to get archive on this. So thanks for joining us.